Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard, everyone, to the end of the week. It's the 26th day of February. I'm Bob. I've got equipment falling apart in front of my very eyes. Okay, that's put back together again. Let's see if we can do this and make some noises with the microphones that the $40 million a year professional has never made. But that's okay, because it's Friday, and it's not nice outside. Snowy and sloppy and, well, slickety. I just got back from town. Town, you understand, being the little hamlet of, you know, a couple of thousand people that I live in. This beautiful little village. Old coal town. Just got back from town. And I've been thinking all day long about just exactly what was this show going to be. Yes, I have. And how would we start it? And how would we get it going? Well, I think we'll start with a trip to the mailbag. How can I not with a topic like this, call a bit professional broadcaster? How can I not with correspondence like this coming all the way from far off frozen Sweden? The feud between our Swedish listener and our Norwegian listener has expanded. And I say that because after my last reading of an email, I think that one was from our buddy Michael, that referenced the really cool Norwegian curling pants. I got this overnight from Scott in Sweden. Hey, Bob! The Norskies are wearing golf pants while curling? What sort of fashion statement is that? As my grandma Edna would say, well, I never, nor did she, ever. So while I'm in agreement with my fellow expat in Norge about the delight that is snow, would you please tell that Norwegian, and this is the part where I have to read some sort of phonetic, alliteratized Swedish, and I'm just praying that there's nothing in there involving doing anything to one a member of one's ancestry or anything. Scott, this better be good. All right, squeaky microphone noise is coming. Att det svenska curlinget har gamla bjöksår de skulle gärna skänka i fjör att inte alla nordbor behövas skamas. I think skamas, or whatever it is thanks. I have no idea what I just said. La pistola está en la muleta. That's all I remember of high school Spanish. Now for the fun stuff, says Scott. Thursday's show brought up the latest phase of the Industrial Revolution, the race to the bottom, outsourcing abroad, that is, capitalism. Well, that sort of crap is rampant in the freelance translation biz I live in. One of the biggest American firms has its headquarters on Park Avenue, New York City, is very top-heavy with overweight executives, confirmed by a famous web search engine that shall remain nameless. Several of their project managers have told me when I pressed them that, yes, the suits are pressuring the project managers to push our rates down. They're offering about 20% less than their previously already very low rates. So, here's a sample of my replies to them every time they write requesting I take on one of their assignments. I expect to be on the international blacklist by May 1st. Well, that would be suitable. That is, after all, May Day, the International Labor, International Workers' Holiday. But if nothing else, writing and sending these has been cathartic. Hi, Joanna. Nothing personal, but due to management's policy of trying to push down rates, an act of class warfare upon we freelancers, I've quit taking assignments from until it A, finds cheaper accommodations than Park Avenue, B, reduces the pay of its numerous executives by 25% too to share the load, and C, restores the old rates. I see no reason to play the role your suits are assigning me to do my best work at reduced rates and thus undercut my rates in the EU. Hey, look, Scott, here's how you do it. They want to cut your rates by 20%. You cut accurate translations by 20%. Get 20% of the words wrong. You know, where you would translate mother-in-law, translate bilge water. Okay? I think that's fair. Scott says, I see no reason to play the role your suits are assigning me due to my to do my best work at reduced rates and thus undercut my rates in the EU. One doesn't have to be Karl Marx to see what is going on here. But clearly there is a need for an international union of freelance translators to begin to fight back. This race for the bottommost sweatshop is a dagger to the heart of the economy, a negative feedback loop. Without decent pay, spending goes down. Without spending, manufacturing production goes down. Without manufacturing, pay goes down, and so the cycle repeats. Feedback loop. Exactly. The short-sightedness of your executives, like many of their ilk, will ultimately poison their own well when the need for translation dries up as businesses fail. Supply-side economics is a failure, and its continued practice, pure folly. So take me off your contact list, and good luck dealing with your management. You're going to need it. The executive class treats workers like us as expendable, replaceable parts. Most sincerely, Scott. And then I guess someone else. Hi, Marka. I'm not supposed to be in the database anymore. I wrote to the New York City HQ a few days ago to tell them that I am ending my collaboration after they declared class war by pressuring project coordinators to push down rates. Several of your colleagues have confirmed this to be so. The usual routine is to offer something at a flat fee, but when the words are counted, they come up to about 8 cents to 9 cents a word or less. This is very low for the developed world market, and for me to play my assigned role and do top-quality work at these rates only rewards clients for using cheapskate payers like our company. It is not in my best interest to undercut my own rates at better-paying firms. This economic race to the bottom of sweatshop conditions is emblematic of what is wrong with the economy. Falling pay lowers consumption, which leads to lower production, which leads to layoffs and lower pay, thus sending the negative feedback loop off into a new cycle of misery. Ultimately, it ends with a huge class of underemployed poor people and a small wealthy elite. I may not be able to beat this, but I refuse to be led to its abattoir if I could help it. Nothing personal, Marka. It's not you, but your executives I'm boycotting. Hi, Sarah. To save both of us time, I've written to the main office and asked to be taken out of the freelancer database as a personal protest to the downward push on rates that is undertaken. I do not wish to do my best work for a company that is undercutting freelancer wages. It's one of a kind with the bad old days of the robber barons, and I just don't want to play along. I'll spare you the full rant. I'll take my chances with other agencies, nothing personal whatsoever in this. It's your management who has apparently declared class war on me and my mates first. And there are a couple more of those. And you know what? I say good on you, Scott. Good. And Scott uses the word robber barons there, by the way. And that reminds me of something I saw earlier today via head writer David from Tennessee. He pointed my way toward an MSNBC photo essay, the slideshow called "What Happened to Empty Mansions" over at MSNBC.com. I am an absolute sucker for black and white photography, especially old black and white photography, and this particular story concerned a robber baron, every bit as rich as the first Rockefeller, at one time the richest or next richest man in America. His last name was Clark. If you live in Las Vegas, you live in Clark County. Yes, it's named after him. And he was a rapacious bastard. I mean, a real poster child for the rapacious qualities of the robber baron, Gilded Age Victorian industrialized, predatory capitalism, free market nightmare of the early part of the 20th, late part of the 19th and early part of the 20th century. In fact, Mark Twain, none other than Mark Twain, opined on this creep Clark. And where, daggummit, where is it gone? Oh, well, it disappeared on me, saying that anyone, oh, here he is. Yeah, Mark Twain said of this individual, William A. Clark, that anyone in America would recognize he was a mining baron, of course. Why are they always mining barons? But he was. Tried to bribe his way into the United Senate, the United States Senate, with an envelope filled with 10 $1,000 bills back when we did $1,000 bills. Yeah. Mark Twain, speaking on Senator Clark, said, and I quote, "He is as rotten a human being as can be found anywhere under the flag. He is a shame to the American nation, and no one has helped to send him to the Senate who did not know that his proper place was the penitentiary with a chain and ball on his legs." But this photo essay, this slideshow, detailed the rise of this man and his progeny, and it detailed his words as well, and that led David in Tennessee to ask some questions, namely some of these. The evil robber baron set out to buy himself a senator title, and it took him 4 tries. Getting busted trying to bribe people didn't stop him. How have, from then to now, Repig Lickens changed? The man, when he was criticized for the harm and the horrors that he created through his mining industries, the man said, "Future generations can damn well take care of themselves." That came after he had denuded hundreds, if not thousands, of acres with his copper smelters. How have Repig Lickens changed? I mean, my God, that was in the late 1890s, early 1900s. There is a direct line between this Clark creep and Don Blankenship. "Future generations can damn well take care of themselves." How have Repig Lickens changed in 100 years? While duping millions that he's just a regular guy? You know, George Bush lives in that neighborhood. How have Repig Lickens changed? Mr. Clark loved Arizona and made the nut of his fortune there because Arizona had a deportation policy for anyone who spoke up in favor of the right of working people to organize for their own best interest. He had them deported on his word alone in order to keep wages low and conditions miserable. Same question. How have Repig Lickens changed? David noted that last night Glenn Beck, by the way, who lives in the same neighborhood in Connecticut where one of the Clark mansions stands, last night Glenn Beck screamed at his audience something about, nowhere in the Constitution does it mandate dentures. He said that in response to tales of failed health care or none at all that were offered up by Representative Louise Slaughter, Democrat from New York. Everybody, 1, 2, 3. How have Repig Lickens changed? Mr. Clemens revealed Mr. Clark for the beast that he was, and the beast continued to feed. Simply telling the world a man is evil does nothing to stop that sort of evil. Everybody, chorus, how have Repiglickens changed? Ultimately, the world that let Mr. Clark do what he did is the world that the ugly right wing craves and is in no small way taking this country back to. The days when the slaughterhouse cases and Lochner versus New York were decided by a predatory pro-business Supreme Court in the latter part of the 19th century and the early part of the 20th. That's the country they want back. And it's peopled by cheap labor, miserable conditions, horrible health care, and predators all around. Come on, choir. How have Repiglickens changed? And with that in mind, I also commend to you something over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We are proud to announce the arrival of a new voice on the opinion page of the Horn. Our good friend Reverbo, whom you have heard for a couple of years now, periodically on the program. A man of great good humor and great observation, has written his first full feature piece at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. When you get a chance, do please go over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and read Contemplating a Cavalcade of Crazy. Because some of the things that we just touched on about the robber barons then and now are evident within the four corners of Reverbo's introductory essay as well. It's a little bit about getting to know Reverbo, and it's a little bit about getting to know where he's going and going to go. It's a brilliant piece. The ranting keyboard, otherwise known as ELO, said in responding to the post, Will Durst used to be my favorite political writer until I read this. Now you can say there's a tie for first place. Looking forward to reading much more, Reverbo. And indeed. Indeed. So go and have a look, and very much welcome to Reverbo, to the Horn family, in print. I can't wait to see what comes next. I really, really can't. We're going to have fun tonight. Because it is, after all, Friday on the front porch. Just because it's freezing cold outside, just because there's miserable snow on the ground again, just because it looks like March will enter like a lion and hopefully therefore exit like a lamb, although I've lost faith in all of those rubrics and paradigms. Don't do faith very well. I just really, really don't. Just because of all that doesn't mean that you can't put your boots up on the rail and grab something either ice cold or toasty warm, kick back, cuss and discuss, conversate, and make for a wonderful, wonderful chat as we head into the weekend. And I want to tell you something about what's coming Monday. On this program at this time, we will be joined by one of the best friends that this radio network has. And that is our good friend Jeff Biggers. Jeff authored, wrote, researched, and took a trip into his own family history in order to craft the newly released book, Reckoning at Eagle Creek. A secret history of coal in the heartland. There's a sticky up at headonradionetwork.com of my review of the book. If you click on the book itself, you can go forward and buy said book. I highly encourage owning this book. If you really, really want to get an overview of the manifest evil that has stalked this nation in the name of the acquisition of coal, you must own this book. So, by all means, please feel free to do so. Jeff will be joining us on Monday evening at about 6:30 p.m. A sense for where the program goes tonight? Well, like I said, we closed the program last night with a lot of unplowed earth, a lot of untouched stories, and so forth. One of which absolutely had me all but standing on my head when I first read it. It comes from South Dakota. It is absolutely astonishing to me when I read something like this, that this can happen in the, 21st century. If you go back and you read a Cavalcade of Craziness by Reverbo, you will see reference to the fact that, we ought to be on our way to Mars by now, and Reverbo is still waiting on the helium-filled pants of tomorrow that he ordered 45 years ago. Well, the same thing kind of goes with this story. It's the 21st century, and you are at pains, I am at pains at least, to comprehend how something like this goes down. It happened last week when the House of Representatives of the legislature of the state of South Dakota passed a resolution regarding global warming. It was a 36-30 vote on global warming. It was House Concurrent Resolution 1009. And it called for what the South Dakota legislature terms balanced teaching of global warming in the public schools of South Dakota. Now, the thing is all full of proto-crypto mythology and about the fact that, carbon dioxide is actually good for you. Here, you want to eat this cotton? It's catch 22 all over again. After all of that crap, it continued. Well, let me just read you the language of the resolution. Let me see if I can be suitably legislatively stentorian.
Now, therefore, be it resolved by the House of Representatives of the 85th Legislature of the State of South Dakota, the Senate concurring therein, that the South Dakota legislature urges that instruction in the public schools relating to global warming include the following.
This is the Bill Hicks referenced part of the program. Strap in. Make sure you can't get loose.
1. That global warming is a scientific theory rather than a proven fact. 2. That there are a variety,
this is a list, okay, so pay attention, this is why you're strapped in,
that there are a variety of climatological, meteorological, astrological, thermological, cosmological, and ecological dynamics that can affect world weather phenomena, and that the significance and interrelativity of these factors is largely speculative. And 3, that the debate on global warming has subsumed political and philosophical viewpoints which have complicated and prejudiced the scientific investigation of global warming phenomena. And be it further resolved, that the legislature urges that all instruction on the theory of global warming be appropriate to the age and academic development of the student and to the prevailing classroom circumstances. I wonder if they'd pass something like that if somebody wanted to teach coal in the classroom in South Dakota. Betcha not. Whereas we of the South Dakota legislature frequently grind up coal and place it on our Wheaties. You know the drill. Yeah, did you hear that early part? Are you pulling at the straps? Are you trying to get loose? Do you want to just go run screaming naked into the night, tearing at your clothing and your hair like some sort of maniac? Because the South Dakota legislature has encouraged the South Dakota educational system to contemplate and include in its curricula regarding global warming the astrological causes of global warming? The astrological causes? Really? 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 Yes, really. The astrological causes of global goddamn warming. Really. The astrological causes. Well, you see, the Earth is actually heating up because the south polar region of the Earth has fallen into the testicles of Aries, while the north polar region is in the elbows of the ox. Great God Almighty. It is February the 26th. Of the year 2010, we ought to be on our way to Mars, and instead we've got some dead-brained freaks in South Dakota urging the astrological teachings regarding global warming. I think this is actually worse than outright telling them to teach creationism. You know what it reminded me of? There is a scene. It is Act 1, Scene 2 of Shakespeare's King Lear, in which the early plot begins to unfold as hatched by Edmund, the bastard son of the Duke or Earl or Baron or whatever the hell he was of Gloucester. Daddy Gloucester is an old and doddering fool who wanders around the stage saying things like this.
These late eclipses in the sun and moon portend no good to us. Though the wisdom of nature can reason it thus and thus, yet nature finds itself scourged by the sequent effects. Love cools, friendships fall off, brothers divide, in cities mutinies, in countries discord, in palaces, treason, and the bond cracked twixt son and father.
Yeah, because the late eclipses in the sun, right. Apparently there are relatives of the Earl of Gloucester in the South Dakota legislature. Enter Edmund. And I love this. He's supposed to be the bad guy, but this is delightful. This is the excellent foppery of the world, that when we are sick in fortune, often the surfeit of our own behavior, we make guilty of our disasters the sun, the moon, and the stars, as if we were villains by necessity, fools by heavenly compulsion, knaves, thieves, and treachers by spherical predominance, drunkards, liars, and adulterers, by an enforced obedience of planetary influence, and all that we are evil in, by a divine thrusting on. An admirable evasion of whoremaster man. To lay his goatish disposition to the charge of a star.
My father compounded with my mother under the dragon's tail, and my nativity was under Ursa Major, so that it follows I am rough and lecherous.
Tuh. Should have been that I am, had the maidenliest star in the firmament twinkle on my bastardizing. And so in South Dakota,
where apparently children are going to be taught that the globe only warms when the Earth is in the house of Mars. Sweet Jesus. We're screwed. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. Your calls are next. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob. You know what that is? You know what that's the sound of? That is the sound of optimism. The Fifth Dimension, The Age of Aquarius, and Let the Sunshine In, 1969, from the stunning musical Hair. And I play that for a couple of reasons. One, on the one hand, because of the South Dakota story. But two, because of something that Reverbo says in a cavalcade of crazy. And by the way, there are some issues yet remaining on the fix of the website. Be patient. When you go to headonradionetwork.com, you should initially see the reference to Reverbo's post. Just click it. Click it before it goes away. And it'll open up and you'll see the introductory, delightful introductory photograph. But there was there's a back reference included in what Reverbo wrote that I think is worth mention. And this is just one paragraph out of it, and it's lovely. Reverbo writes, a friend of mine once remarked that the world as we knew it ended on December the 31st, 1969. Remember, the Age of Aquarius is from 1969. A friend of mine once remarked that the world as we knew it ended on December 31st, 1969, and it's hard to dispute that. It's 2010, folks, and we're still arguing about the same things, the economy, poverty, the environment, education, taxes, energy, security, et al. Isn't it about time we figured out the role of government and got it rolling for everybody? We can't just set things on cruise control anymore. That's long gone. Is anyone going to step up and actually fix anything while I'm still around? It's still the people against the establishment. With apologies to the Ramones, Southern culture on the skids, and surf music's third wave, you can argue rock and roll basically had its last hurrah at Woodstock and then Altamont. The passionate idealism of alternative directions to the 60s and the voices who championed that collapse in apathy or were silenced by the assassination. Meanwhile, Honeywell released its first under $10,000 16-bit minicomputer, the H316, designed for the kitchen, no less. The middle class was peaking. The new frontier culminated that summer when three Americans actually made it to the freaking moon, and the commies couldn't even make a decent car. The 1960s was the ultimate manifestation of the United States. Yeah. Really. And remember, the long, slow slide, and I'm adding this on my own accord, the long, slow slide of American wage equity would begin 3 years later under Richard M. Nixon, when real earning potential would begin to decline and has continued to decline for the last 38 years. Yeah, Reverbo's right. It's time to start thinking about how to fix some of this stuff. It's not enough simply to stop the bleeding. It's time to turn the damn car around. Tell the Democrats and Republicans, well, mostly the Democrats, because they're the ones that are sort of enabling the Republican squabbling, if you two don't settle down back there, I'm going to turn this thing around. Well, you know what? They're not going to quit squabbling, and we had better, by God, turn the damn thing around. I'm also being reminded by Sue that if you want to read Reverbo's work, you can find the link to the article by going to the headonradionetwork.com website and clicking on the tab that says Feature. Take you right there. Okay? Okay. So that's where the show begins tonight. It's about 23 minutes before the hour, and we go straight away to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, hey, Kate.
Hello, hello. I have a couple. You mentioned a while ago, way back in the beginning of the program, that you said something, you made some snide remark about $1,000 bills. We don't make them anymore?
Oh, hell no.
What was that I just sent to the mailbox then? Oh, my God.
Well, if it had Art Linkletter's picture on it, it was probably from an old copy of The Game of Life.
No, it didn't. I joke. And that was a nice reading of the legislative language from South Dakota, but nobody in SODAC talks that way. I'm sorry. You blew that.
No. That was stentorian legislative speak. I'm sure that...
It was nice theater, but nobody in SODAC sounds like that. And I don't know why anybody would be surprised. There's a lot weirder things going on in states all over the country. That isn't surprising to come out of South Dakota. I mean... Did you hear what I just said? South Dakota.
South Dakota.
I guess.
But see, the problem is, Kate, if I try to do that accent, I just wind up sounding like Sarah Palin.
I know, and she's not even from SODAC.
No, she's from Idaho.
Oh, I don't talk like that. in Idaho either. But anyhow, I just realized something. Just had a little flash. Whenever I'm talking, like I'm seeing the picture of the map, or I'm seeing the Black Hills or something, and I pick up, I do that accent. I mean, I do that I sound that way. Back to East Tennessee. What else was I going to say? Oh, I needed to make an announcement that anybody who is needing some health care who's in and around the area of Lexington, Virginia, that next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, there's a free health clinic at Buena Vista at the college.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you know anybody who...
Is it Buena Vista?
Yeah.
Because, no, that might be one of those obscure southern renderings. It might be Buena Vista.
Oh. Okay.
Just saying.
Buena Vista.
Not kidding.
Right outside of Lexington, the
right.
College.
Yeah, right. Just for accuracy's sake. It might be Buena Vista. Something inside me says somewhere there's a Buena Vista.
Okay, then thank you. I stand corrected. I'm just learning the language back here. But anyway, if you go on the website, if anybody's listening who knows somebody who needs in that area who needs some health care, that would be dental, vision, general medical, and I think we're going to have the women's health clinic there. You can call the office here in Knoxville and ask them because the mammogram truck should be up there too. So anyway, go to RAMUSA, RAMUSA.org. And look up the details and the specifics and give the number for the office. And it's Saturday all day and Sunday half a day. So have to be there early to get a number and then stand in line. So just doing my part for socialized medicine. Mm-hmm. And a little bit on the language issue. Last week I was at, where were we? Dandridge, Mississippi here, Tennessee, and I was doing registering patients, and I had an impossible interaction with a 14-year-old from Sweetwater. I could not understand his name nor his address, and I absolutely could not understand what the boy was saying. It was, I turned the paper around and had him write it down, and I said, oh, okay.
Wow.
I'm embarrassed. And then a couple of people later, was a 24-year-old from, newly arrived from Honduras who spoke, I could understand him better than I could little old Tyler. It was an amazing, I don't know what Tyler.
Well, there's English and then there's English.
Yeah, I don't know what Tyler was doing with his words and his letters, but they sure weren't getting to my ear. Oh, God. And I wanted to, I've come across something here in the library that is pretty astounding, and it ties into somebody who called in last night on Malloy's show, who had gone to the museum in, where is it? North Carolina. Yeah, North Carolina. The African American Museum. Why did this just left my mind? I mean, I just went flat right there. And he was so excited because there was a museum and they had the seats from the resistance, the sit-ins. They had them. He was so excited. And he didn't know anything about this, and he sounded like he was in his mid-20s or so. And I thought, Lord of mercy, where is it? Who teaches history? I mean, what is up with that? And he made the remark, I mean, he kept going on and on about Rosa, and he said something about Rosa being the first, and I said, no, Rosa wasn't the first. Her bus, little set two with the bus driver, was in 55, and they had a big old 10-day boycott, bus boycott down in Baton Rouge in June of 53. So the point I'm trying to make is that history is so distorted that today I made it a point to try to figure out how does it happen that Rosa got all of the publicity and the boycott down in Baton Rouge didn't, and why have people been left out of the history? And it was because the media picked up on Rosa Parks.
Well, it's not just the media, though. Rosa had perhaps been taught a little better and had a little more infrastructure behind her.
Well, yeah, she had Highlander behind her.
Darn right.
And so...
There was, what, 6 weeks of teaching that went into saying, no, sir, I'm not getting up?
Yeah, they had been up here just a few weeks before before she went on the board. And she wasn't a little old cleaning lady. She was a professional woman. You know, I mean, it was... our history has gotten so distorted that... Martin Luther King didn't, his nonviolence just didn't spring from his forehead like from the forehead of Zeus. It just...
Oh, no. That was all learned behavior. And among other things, since I was mentioning Jeff Biggers earlier, it is recounted in loving detail in his earlier American Book Award winning piece, The United States of Appalachia.
Okay.
It is all there, and he did a brilliant job of laying out the role of, you know, where Highlander came from, how it came to be, and the role that it played in the civil rights movement. Right down to explaining where We Shall Overcome came from.
Guy Carwin and Pete Seeger, and Pete changed the words, and Guy was the one that was. He still lives here. I mean, they've got a little house down over the hill, and Guy and Candy still live here. But and they're consultants and emeritus. You know, they're sacred, but they won't admit it. I mean, they don't like to talk that way. One of the people who this ties into a new department, a new program at UT. One of the people who taught Martin was Bayard Rustin, and he doesn't get any. I had never even heard of the man until I started looking up, and come to find out, he and two other people started. I think they started SNCC. I'm getting this all confused, but anyway, he got put to the sideline because he was gay, and they didn't want that getting the whole movement getting tarred with his homosexuality. And so Bayard didn't get hardly any credit, but he's the one who taught Martin Gandhi's techniques. And, you know, we didn't learn any of that stuff. God, gets just, you know, it's layer upon layer upon layer. Anyway, there's a...
Well, and you know what? There are so many examples of that, Kate. You know, consider the people of the state of Alabama, who proudly will point out that Helen Keller is the only, you know, there's a hall of statuary in the United States Capitol. I think we've mentioned this before.
Mm-hmm.
Helen Keller is the only disabled person and the only female, the only child who is represented within that hall of statuary.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she also appears on the state quarter of the state of Alabama. But the only thing that most Alabamians know about her when they see her on the back of their state quarters, looky there. I mean, there's that deaf, dumb, and blind girl that learned to talk and did for America's first lady of courage. It's like she's some female version of a character from the Who's Tommy. But in point of fact, the minute that she began communicating, the critical issues of human rights,
mm-hmm.
and not just, you know, not just for the disabled or differently abled population, but for all human beings. She opined vociferously about the rights of workers, and the same about the evils of the First World War, which was evil and we had no business in.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in fact an espoused socialist. But mm-hmm. try telling that to an Alabamian. Just
mm-hmm.
try.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I tell people where they want to know what I'm doing here, and I say, oh, I'm a Highlander, and I get three responses. One is the eyes kind of roll, and they go, oh, uh-huh. And the other one is, huh? And the other one is, all right.
Wasn't that that movie about that Scottish feller and James Bond was in it?
And I met a woman at the high school over in Jefferson County, and she works with, she does student programs with, and she brings her students up here quite a bit, and they work around and learn a lot. And she noted that to somebody in a conversation one time, and they said, are you in that communist school? And so people are still considering this to be the communist school, and I think, well, okay, whatever. Reverbo asked an interesting question. I think it was when you were talking about his essay that the only way we get change is it's got to begin with the people that are directly affected by the problem. And we can sit around and wring our hands and, you know, and screech and, you know, but there's, you know, we got to go and educate people. If they're the people who are directly affected by the problem, they have to be educated, and then they can do with that what they need to do. And so, anyway, I'm just, socialist here. I also wanted to point out that people who, if you've tried to get back on, you mentioned a while ago that the site was back up, and if people were trying to get in onto PayPal earlier this week and didn't get to try again because it's back up, so I know that for a fact. Oh, I wanted to ask, what, is there any chance that the old B-52 mechanic, is his name in any of the union organizing books down here? I mean, if any of the stuff that he's been involved in?
I don't know. I don't know. Not certain at all. That's one of those you'd have to ask the boss.
Okay. I remembered that I don't know his last name, so I thought I'd catch that some other point down the road. It would be very cool to see him turn up in a book someplace. Yo, I know him. Anyway, I wanted to get into, in closing, as Baptist preacher says one more time, I've been listening and hearing people say that, I heard you and I'm going to send some money. I got to get you some money. And all the people that have made promises to send in contributions, if they would just do it, please. Because I think it's a fair bet that you're probably not even halfway to the $2,000 mark for February. Is this true?
No, actually, we've almost made February's nut, which means that what we actually did was make last October's nut, if you know what I mean. The very, very few and far between do we actually make the monthly goal. We have come very, very close to doing it for February. But that basically shovels a spade full of dirt into the hole we stand in.
Yeah, that means you just don't pay in November's bills then, right?
More or less, yeah.
Okay. Folks, are you hearing that? Bob, you never, ever, ever, ever say, well, you know, we're up to $787 now, and we really need $2,000, and so y'all, because if people knew how much we're short, they would, every week, they...
Well, it's kind of hard to do, Kate, because we live short, okay?
I know that, but people, I want to know that people...
Well, let me just flesh that out real quick. What I mean by we live short is the fact that we talk about paying bills, but we never talk about paying people. You know, we talk about the fact that we ask for $2,000 a month, but that is operational. You know,
I don't.
That's not. You know, and this is a labor-oriented radio show.
Yeah.
And yet, I can't write a check to anybody. So, I mean, if you were to actually calculate the true cost of this program, it is probably closer, if we're paying people the way they deserve to be paid, the true cost of this radio network is probably closer to $5,000 to $8,000 a month.
Right.
I mean,
and I wish that, you know, when people aren't always listening, or it goes over the top, or you don't mention it until the top of the third hour before Malloy comes on, and I just wish I knew that people were saying, "Damn, Bob, why didn't you say something? We didn't know that." So what I'm saying, folks, is, you know, just send the money that you promised. If the people that promised would send the money that they promised, then that might help a little bit. But the boss just keeps getting the pink envelopes in the mailbox, and that's just not cool. This is the
no, and some of the and some of those pink envelopes are actually quite cranky.
I'm sure they are by now.
I'm just
feeling bitchy and cranky about this because people keep saying, "Well, we'll send you some money," and it annoys me that people just take advantage of this program. And it's so entertaining, it's so informative, and it's so consistent. And they just sit there like NPR and don't ever send any money. You know, it's a pledge week. You know, God, you know, and never call in, never hit the PayPal button.
So, you know, the one thing that you just said that really, really just tickles me pink. Is that seemingly innocent, innocuous little word you just used, Kate, consistent. There have been times that I've seen folks pop into the chat room and say, is Bob on tonight? Well, if it's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, the chances are better than 99% that yes, it's Bob. Because if there's anything to be said, I am proud, so proud of the fact that we have made something that has been here. It hasn't been spotty. It hasn't been sporadic. You know, the longest time I've ever taken away from the microphone was when I was busy burying my father.
Yeah, right.
With that in mind, there's something to be proud of in that. I mean, I know of radio shows out there right now that are out there raising money for a radio show that doesn't exist.
What?
Let me say that again. There is a radio show out there that doesn't exist that money is being raised for.
What is that?
Well, I'm not going to say the name.
Oh, well, shit, just drop one shoe then. I mean...
No, we will not play 20 questions, Kate. It is not bigger than a bread box, and it is not larger than a camel. Smaller than a camel.
Not vegetable. Okay, yeah, got it. Anyway, well, okay, yeah, I mean, you know...
But that's the way it is out there. That's the way it is out there, Kate. You know, there's always an idea. There's always a something we could maybe sort of do if only blah, blah, blah. And we, on the other hand, you know, with the mighty, mighty determination of Wayne, Boss Man Wayne, and the continuing determination of the listeners to this network, we didn't say, well, you know, if we raise this much, we'll go back on the air.
No.
We went on the air, and we operated on the Field of Dreams model. If you build it, they'll come.
Yeah, but they've come, but not everybody's paying, okay? I just should shut up now. I'm just cranky. This is a conversation that you're uncomfortable with, and I get way over the top and out on the edge and my neck. So, you know, this does not make good radio. And by the way, how do the Republicans differ today than they were then? The Republicans today don't have private train cars. They have Learjet.
Right, exactly.
Big difference.
Yeah, and but that's a, you know, that's a question of degree, and some of those private Pullman cars were pretty nice. That evil Clark bastard that has stuff named after him in Arizona and Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
That guy had a private rail line that ran into the basement of his entire New York City block Park Avenue mansion. Beaux Arts, I think, is the architectural style.
Mm-hmm.
He had a private rail line that ran into the basement of his mansion for nothing but coal.
Oh.
Kid you
not. Bless his heart.
His daughter, and the whole point of the slideshow was the fact that his daughter is about to turn 104, and nobody knows where she is. She's not granting any interviews, and everybody is down to the point of absolutely having kittens with crocheted tails wondering where the money's going to go.
Well, that's the problem with having money, isn't it, Johnny, that used to say, you know, or Waylon or somebody, I don't know, Willie, somebody, if I had a dollar, I'd worry about it, what I'm going to do with it, so I give it away. So, or however, you know, the point is that I don't have any money because then I just worry about what I'm going to do with it, so it's best not to have any. But in this case, I just want to point out, remember, it's winter time. It's winter in West Virginia. There are heating bills. There are light bills. There are utilities to pay to keep the studio, at least keep the studio warm. Your hot air doesn't always just fall the pipes, you know. So, I mean, if it's cold where somebody else is, think how cold it is up on the hill where you're at. So, I mean, folks, just pay some damn money. We got to keep this on the air. And, you know, we talk about how progressive radio, we're not, you know, liberal radio. What happens when we, well, you know, someday this thing's going to go dark and nobody's going to go, what the hell happened to that? Well, you know, we can't keep liberal media on the air. You know, there's no call for it. Okay.
Yeah, that goes hand in hand with, hey, where's Bob? And, you know, we can, I don't know, maybe I'll still be able to afford streaming, tethering through my cell phone, and I can turn it on long enough to let folks hear me saying, welcome to Walmart!
Well, at least you're...
Actually, it'll be more like, welcome to Walmart.
Yeah, right. They wouldn't keep you 15 minutes. Don't kid yourself. You're unemployable there.
I am,
yeah,
and I know
pity.
It.
It's a pity. So am I. So anyway, I'm off to Virginia next week. But anybody listening who has anybody in the audience who needs some health care, go to ramusa.org and look up all the details and get in to get some free health care. We have great clinics, and so
that's a beautiful thing, Kate.
It really
is.
Wanted to, and I asked about. Putting some copies of Jeff's new book in the library, but they have already printed a new catalog, and so it's too late to order any. So I'm going to try to get two or three copies and donate them. So I'll get back to you on that, but we'll get some books. We'll get Jeff's books in the Highlander Library.
I can't imagine that they wouldn't absolutely.
Well, she wanted them. Yeah, she wanted. She said, "Oh yes." But I've already, and we don't have any classes, so there's no book sales going on right now. So. This isn't a real good time to order books because the library, the catalog has already been printed for the bookstore.
And don't forget, since you are going to be near Lexington, Virginia, if you've got a moment, you can always slip over to the campus of the Virginia Military Institute and see Stonewall Jackson's stuffed horse. Kid you not. They've got Stonewall Jackson's horse stuffed at the Virginia Military Institute.
That's VMI, right?
Yeah.
Surely you jest. Like,
I don't call me Shirley.
I don't even really kind of hardly want to go to this new venue because it's an LDS school. And I just looked at this and I said, what? Like, I really want to hang out. Well, anyway, I just will hang out.
Well, don't write your name down anywhere. You'll get baptized in absentia.
Yes, they will. And they offered that we stay in the dorms, and I thought, I really want to stay in a Mormon dorm. I think I'll just go get me a cheap motel somewhere, and I'll use up a little bit of my horn money for March, but it'll be worth it. I will not
dispute your decision, not one iota, Kate.
Not to stay on an LDS campus in the dormitory.
Couldn't pay me.
At least it'll be warm enough.
Well, and just by way of closing out, our buddy Marty writes in and says, at this free health clinic, I wonder if there will be any teabaggers there with signs saying something like, we don't need no free health clinics.
I did have an interesting encounter with a little old lady. I mean, literally, little, and she was older than me. And she was just upset because the doctor, she was going to, didn't want to make a will because the doctor would kill her.
I'm guessing she's not an organ donor.
And I tried to explain to her that at home death was that they were going to try to write in that the doctor will be paid to have a consult with you to write a living will, to find a living will for you, and you can do whatever you want. You can stay alive until you're 1,000, or you can have them pull the plug. It doesn't. She would not. She was so stressed out and so not with me. She would not hear a word I was saying. But I did meet one that she was, but I did, I ran into a, oh, I had to go back to the vision clinic and get a gal out to take her to another clinic and whatever, and I said, come on with me. She needed to get away from her husband, and it was just awful. Have a good vacation. And she says, as I'm walking her down the hall, she goes, Miss Kate, you're just an angel. And I said, honey, thank you. I always wanted to be an angel. So, anyway, I'm off and running. Thank you for taking my call. And you folks, just...
Well, keep your feathers warm and dry, Kate.
Send feathers, I see. Just send some money, okay? I'm tired of talking about it. Later.
Later. See you, Kate.
Ciao for now. Bye.
Bye. From here, there, and yonder, in this case, in the hills of East Tennessee and heading to the hills of Western Virginia, which is distinct and apart from West Virginia, I might add, for the geographically challenged. That is our dear buddy, Kate. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
Hey, what's up, Gary?
Hey, what's going on?
You know, we made it to Friday. It's snowing, and I've still got a roof over my head. I'm counting my blessings.
Yeah, you got a lot of blessings, man.
I do.
Good family. House.
You know, you can't overestimate that family and house part. You really can't.
No, can't. What else is going on?
You know, just to get it, trying to get it cranked up. I got a million things tonight. Can you imagine? This blows my little mind. Even the Saudis have figured out, Gary, that they need to be in the solar business. While we're still talking about clean coal, and heaven help him, our president is talking about clean coal. Even the Saudis. Say that they will be a major exporter of solar energy in the next couple of decades.
Well, I guess they know that they're running out of oil.
Yes. But do you know that President Obama, in just the last week, Gary, said that the United States, he did this again, said that the United States is the Saudi Arabia of coal? Can we please get away from that metaphor, Mr. Obama?
Yeah, you know, who knows, you know. You know, you kind of wonder if what a politician says is really their agenda. You know, sometimes that's what I sometimes wonder.
Well, you want to look at it as him sort of throwing a sop to the coal industry, but the problem is it's a multi-billion dollar sop.
Yeah, but I'm saying that Obama may not be person is well versed on green jobs and things like that. I mean, you know,
well, he had Van Jones talking to him for a year before he let Glenn Beck run him off.
Did you see his interview last night with Tavis Smiley?
No, I did not. That would have been worth being up for.
Yeah, the thing that piqued me out was that he went to the interview and he said basically, look, he said it was really he went to the administration first, blase blase. And, you know, because they didn't want to be a distraction because of what they were trying to do with health care and other initiatives. And he said, well, you know, I guess he was saying basically felt like he could still do what he had to do even outside the administration. But the one thing that I found interesting in it that he was talking about, you should really see the interview. I would have to see if you can get online or maybe, I think Tavis Smiley may rerun it tonight, but I don't know. I know you said your cable situation is kind of strange.
Pathetic is the word I use, but strange will work.
You probably can get on YouTube. I mean, I'm sure you can get on YouTube. Probably about tomorrow or something. But he said, he was talking about, he said one of the initiatives that he really wanted to push was Appalachian Mountains, you know, creating, he wanted to bring green jobs, he wanted that as a model.
Well, see, I sat in two different meetings last year in D.C. where he specifically, and it was a beautiful, beautiful phrase, where he said, I want to see us turn the Appalachian Mountains from a sacrifice zone to a sacred zone.
Yeah. So you had a guy in administration, had his eye on the prize, which you've been talking about, and that rascal, Glenn Beck, and, you know, maybe the political machine, maybe the Obama administration, whatever, the politics or whatever, you know, I just saying, you know, you sacrifice all these possible jobs and future. For what, you know? For a couple of, I saw the comments and stuff. I just don't see what was the big deal. Okay, he's calling the Republicans assholes. Okay, that's a little bit of part of too much for Washington. I mean, it's nothing for me and you, but I really don't think that's a bigger deal because, you know, partially true. But I don't see what was so offensive that he had to actually lose his post. You know?
Well, it was two things, Gary. It was two things actually. One was the asshole comment. The other was the fact that he had signed a petition calling for a new investigation of the events surrounding the 11th day of September 2001. Now, he didn't
indicated in the interview that he didn't really sign it. He just he spoke with them and he gave them the approval to use his name. But
yeah, okay, yeah, that, well, yeah, that's the circumstance, exactly.
So you didn't sign anything. So I don't, that's my point. You didn't sign nothing. You just said you gave somebody rights. So they took it upon themselves to go further with. So to me, that's not legal.
And so, and so the question is, how in God's name is either of those or both in combination sufficient grounds to make you either run away or be thrown under the bus?
Does Glenn Beck have any ties to the coal people? I mean,
I'm sure if he asked him for it, they'd give him lots of money.
Did they, like, did coal people have the van trucks? Oh, hell no, you're not bringing no jobs to no Appalachia.
Well, no, they're busting their ass to, they're busting their ass on that. I mean, I've got a, my congressman is running for re-election on the premise that he has stopped H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, from getting out of committee. He's bragging about it.
I'm saying, is there any connection directly to Van Jones in terms of, like, I'm just wondering, I don't follow, that's one area I don't follow as well, like green stuff, you know, when you talk about, that's something like
well, is there a direct connection? I don't know quite how you would define it, Gary. But the fact of the matter is, if you think about something like the Coal River Wind Project, which has won national and international recognition and awards for its grassroots vision of bringing green energy and the green future to southern to the last unblown up mountain in southern West Virginia, they are fighting that tooth and toenail. The folks from Coal River Mountain Watch went to the Raleigh County, West Virginia Commission, where the wind farm would sit, and they explained to them, with the wind farm, you're going to get this many millions of dollars in tax revenue for this county alone. With the 15 years of possible activity of this mountain as a mountaintop removal site, you're going to get, at best, a tenth of that. And those county commissioners sat there and said, we'll take the tenth. I'm not kidding. It's astonishing to see the power. It is as if no one's talking about it, but Don Blankenship is out there running around leaving horses' heads in people's beds.
Well, you know, it goes back to the Bush administration. He counts about, you know, a lot of those solar projects, you know, for energy renewal and everything like that. And I'm thinking to myself, man, it is the sun. You know, I mean, if the sun goes out, we're all done anyway. So who in his right mind would not want to try to develop solar energy? You know? So it becomes beyond, like, common sense now. It's about, you know, having a propriety or you know, basically, you know, the whole equation is we want to be able to make something that nobody else can make, so therefore we have a monopoly on the market. And that's what I see with, you know, that's how, you know, coal, oil, industry, everything operates. And that's, unfortunately, it's America. And it's like anything like solar power, because no one can tell me that that technology, and that's why I'm so big on solar. I look at it in terms of, like, you know, I'm really trying to follow these companies in terms of making investments. I really think that's going to be the stock that's going to take off, depending, you know, how you look at it or whatever. Because, like I said before, it's the sun. I was reading something about some, I think it's Chinese, somebody has come up with some, Sweden, I think. They came out some way to make these solar wafers or whatever very thin now so you can bend them.
Right.
A lot cheaper to produce them. So it's like, the technology is about to trick out now. Once that technology hits, you know, and I think maybe the oil people and all those people know it. They're just trying to gouge the system for the last remaining amount of money they can get. But
how dim, how unenlightened, how lacking in foresight does that point out the American coal industry to be? For instance, Gary, when the news story is out there that the Saudis are already taking affirmative steps to make sure that they stay filthy rich off of solar energy when the oil is gone, and there's not a single coal executive in the United States thinking, you know, maybe we might want to get in on this this wind and solar thing.
Well, I always felt like the Saudis were trying to hide their hand because, you know, a couple of years ago when, you know, oil went off the roof, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, peak oil and all this stuff, and, like, the Saudis were kind of like, you know, it's like, you know, they don't want to say, they said we got an infinite supply. They're never going to tell you that they're, you know, run out or they're on the down curve. So it's like, you know, okay, if they start buying up solar panels and stuff like that, it might tip the oil prices in. Hey, you know, oil's about to go out. You know what I mean? So it's kind of, if they are buying solar energy stuff, is that a wise investment, or is there something that they know that we don't know?
Oh, and yeah, and by the way, just to add this little bit more to the whole Van Jones thing, Gary, Marty is reminding me that Van Jones was also one of the founders of Color of Change, and Color of Change launched a determined effort to remove Glenn Beck from the air and succeeded in getting him to lose a lot of advertisers, so therefore that added to the animus that Glenn Beck had directed toward Van Jones.
Yeah, he's listen to him in interviews. You know, he's very smart guy. He's obviously, you can tell he has a passion for it, which is good. And you can tell he seems to have a good sense of the future and where it's headed. And it seems like he's good at, from what I hear about him, you know, what I kind of read, he's good at building people, working people together, which is damn sure what you're going to need the most in that post. And you know, it's a shame because look at the guy, the TSA guy, I forgot his name. Here's another person who I saw an interview with him, and he just seemed brilliant. I mean, the way he was talking about security and things, he said, you know, it ain't all about 3D scanners and all that stuff. He says, what you need is good people. And when you look at the, you know how it is in Israel and other things, it's all about when you're dealing with TA and security, it's about more about people technology, so to speak, you know, the type of people you train, more so than the actual technology, you know, because people can manipulate things to get past technology, but it's hard to manipulate, a person's instinct when they're really well trained. So I was thinking while I was listening to the guy, I said, this guy, you know, really, you know, what he was explaining, he's like, he's the right guy for the job, and he had to step down because
he was the right guy for the job.
So we need total failure in government. We cannot have people who are competent. And I also was thinking to myself, being a black male, I said, they're both black men, so that don't work for you.
Yeah, not so much.
Could it be a little bit of the too many black people, you know, too many competent black people?
You know what? They've said it, and there's a story out there that I've been kind of hanging on to for later because it's got Bob Loses His Mind on Air written all over it. If I just jump on it because I'm, because it's fresh on top of me. Let me play you some audio, if I may, Gary. Would you mind? The guy we're going to listen to is a creep from Arizona by the name of Trent Franks. He's been ranked as one of the most hatefully, vilely conservative members of the United States Congress, according to a new National Journal ranking. And he gave an interview earlier today with a guy who is just a genius at what he does, a guy named Mike Stark, and decided to take on the defense of Rush Limbaugh. And he said he defined, this guy did, Franks, he defined what he called true tolerance as being, quote, being halfway decent to each other in spite of the differences. Okay, well, I can live with that. So then the conversation turns toward abortion, and he says, "I'm not even going to try to paraphrase it. I'm going to let him say it for himself." He says, "Gary, he says the following
about things, and sometimes critically about those who I believe are doing great harm, and whose policies I believe will result in the direct suffering of humanity. I'm pretty strong about that because, unfortunately." I don't know what it takes to get people to see the obvious. It seems like that humanity is very gifted at hiding from something that's obviously true. I mean, in this country, we had slavery for God knows how long. And now we look back on it and we say, well, how blind were they? You know, what was the matter with them? You know, I can't believe. I mean, for me, it's like, well, this is incredible. And we're right. We're right. We should look back on that with criticism. It is a crushing mark on America's soul. And yet today, half of all black children are aborted. Half of all black children are aborted. Far more black children, far more of the African-American community is being devastated by the policies of today than we're being devastated by the policies of slavery. And I think, what does it take to get us to wake up? So sometimes...
Oh, my God. You know? Oh, my God. He just said that instead of abortion, those children would have been better off as slaves. Did you?
I think the thing that was interesting, that the 4 million slaves. I mean, he obviously doesn't know history because I think during the Middle Passage, I think there's been estimated almost probably 50 million people died. You know, over those. You know.
Yeah, the average a long life of a slave in the South. I mean, an incredibly long life of a slave in the South was 60 years of age. I mean, that was ancient. This guy, I know the audio wasn't the best.
I heard what he said. I mean, basically saying, you know,
more African-American, more.
I've heard people, look, there's a common thing with a lot of whites. It's like, you know, you guys are better off on slaves. Because, you know, that's kind of probably what he's kind of abstractly was saying. But it's like, look, you had a house. Paid for. You know what I'm saying? It's always
three hots and a cot.
That's what you had, everything paid for. Nobody, okay, we're whipping you and raping the women and all this other stuff. But you had it made, man. You had a job, you know. You know. So I'm kind of familiar with that kind of, you know, mentality.
But again, this kind of goes back to something I was getting at earlier, Gary. It's 2010. You know, I can even understand this, you know, somebody that talked like this. Saying that in 1956. It's 2010. And these things are still breeding.
What's amazing, though, you know, you ever read these comments, and, you know, you look at these comments, they're always coming from, like, white males. You really hear a white woman, even though I'm not saying that white women don't have those same kind of comments, and I've always gone back to it. It's just, you know, it's kind of like I've always said about the, you know, and I have nothing against John Wayne. I really don't, or the cowboy image or anything else. But there seems to be only one acceptable white male in the world. Can't be a liberal, you know what I'm saying. He has to be this cowboyist, manifest destiny, you know, iron reading, man reading, you know, rugged individualism type of guy. That's a white male. Any white male that doesn't match that standard, like a John Kerry, or at least who they feel, you know, it's like either is not, you know what I'm saying. He's not that image, so therefore he, you know, doesn't get the pass. But if you have that image, that cowboy image or whatever, you fit into that white man mold, you always get the pass, even in the media, you know. And that's why I think the Republicans get so much of a pass in the media, not because it's a corporation, but I think it's because of that white male cowboy manifest destiny type of thing. What's the guy name of? Lou Dobbs, the classic example of that, you know. And I used to like Lou Dobbs. I used to listen to his show. But he has the idea that the white, this white, and again, it's not white, a white way, it's just this way that a certain group of white people, you know, white males think, that's the only way. Any other way is not legitimate, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's really kind of, it's like a demented mentality. And people, Rob, when I travel around the world, I go to places, you know, they'll be nice with people, but when people aren't with it and they're white and they go off somewhere, people who are from that country, I don't care if I'm in South America, wherever I'm have been at, they always come up to me and they just start talking about it. They go to the white man. Now, and some of these people, you know, could be Israeli, you know what I'm saying? But they always have the white. And when they say it, I know who they're talking about. And they're talking about the white skin. They're talking about this American, maybe British, European male who just has this total disrespect for their culture. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And the thing is this one of those situations, Gary, where all you can do is wait for another generation to shuffle off to the dirt and hope that maybe there's a few less of them in the next generation and a few less of them in the next generation until they all die out, or at least they get as close to meaningful zero as can be, mathematically be?
Well, you know, I'm very, I have a certain side of me is pessimistic about something. But I really do feel that, and again, it's not because of Obama. I look at it more of what happened during the election as just a sea change to me overall with people. I see younger people I talk to, you know, my cousins and their friends who, you know, white or whatever, and you know, younger friends. And you talk to them, you just don't see that amount of racism there. It's just not there. You know, even sometimes I'll say some things and one of them look at me, oh, that's, you're being kind of racist. And I may not be even being racist, but just this certain way of trained thinking. And it's just funny to me when they say that because it makes me happy because I'm glad, you know, that they're moving on. I'm a little bit hopeful in that sense. I'm also hopeful, again, with the Obama administration. I mean, you know that. I mean, yeah, I don't agree with everything he's done, but I think overall, you know, I was looking at the health care thing, and I'm thinking to myself, wow. You know, as much as I know a lot of people on the left are mad with Obama or whatever, but let's look at one thing. Let's look at watching the health care summit and watching Obama, watching the president. I'm going to get away from personality. Watching the president of the United States. Could you imagine the president we had 8 years ago sitting there, going through the issues, knowing all the issues, and at least trying to put forth health care? I mean, again, I may not agree with the way he put it on the table and how he's been pushing it, but I'm damn sure glad, Bob, he put it on the table right out the box. I mean, we got to give him credit for that. I mean, he did do that. Now, we can argue about whether it's anything, you know, whether they don't put a public option, but I just feel better that the Democrats are in charge, and I think the government is light years ahead of the government that we had. I just think it's really our responsibility now.
Well, it's trying to get things done,
push,
Gary.
Push Obama and them the way they need to go.
Right, and
make them do it.
And the fact is, you know, they're trying to get some of the right things done, and the vociferous, absolutely insane defenses being put up by the right wing are indications of perhaps indications of the success that we can have. Gary, I hope you hope you have yourself a great weekend. I've got a couple of blinkers here I want to roll on to before they hang up on me because nobody's patient with me. I'll talk to you later, my friend. Bye now.
Yeah.
And you know the number if you want to jump in on the conversation. 877, the numeral 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Couple of lines open, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Ah, pretty good. Is this Cossack?
Yeah, it sure is.
Okay, it's been a while, so you got to give my brain a chance to do the voice print identification.
Oh, no problem. So how you been?
Doing okay, I guess. You know, for getting snowed on, for being sick of winter, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I know what that's like. Unfortunately. Well, we haven't seen the snow yet. It may yet, but we've been lucky so far. It's only been under 20 two or three times.
Count yourself. Well, but then again, you know, when it gets down to 30 where you are, people start hauling out the heavy woolens.
Oh yeah, well they're just not used to it. They have no idea what cold weather is. They think if it's 40 degrees outside, it's cold.
There you go. There you go. It's, well, my sister's the same way. She lives in Mobile and moved there 40 years ago. And, you know, she grew up here in West Virginia. She knows what cold is. But after 40 years in Mobile, by God, 50's freezing.
Well, they've had snow in Mobile.
Oh, I know. It was quite the excitement. I got pictures of some big gloppy flakes flying in the air.
Jesus. Unbelievable. But, you see, because it snowed in the middle of winter, there is no global warming.
I know.
Has anybody bothered to explain to these people the difference between weather and climate?
Apparently not. We keep talking about it, but they look, Cossack, you know, the right wing, whether it's healthcare or whether it's global climate change or poisoning or destroying our communities, our homes, our environment, our bodies. The right wing has its collective index fingers jammed in each ear going, la, 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 can't hear you, can't hear you, la, 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 la. Oh, thank you, Mr. Lobbyist.
Frickin' real. I've been having verbal firefights around here with people because this area is so red it is not funny. You know, everything, the issues from the multiple paps of Kennedy and, you know, the entire right-wing royalists, they take to be God's honest truth. And are you that stupid? Do you, you know, can you not reason at all with your own brain? Well, we do, you know, like the big thing now down here, is they're pushing real hard to put oil wells 3 to 5 miles offshore. And these idiots are going, yeah, we need that. Drill, drill. So what happens?
Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, what happens when the first one of those wellheads blows and your beautiful white sand beaches turn to crap?
They're not going to get well anytime. Well, look, I mean, you know what a devotee I am of L.A., Lower Alabama.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that same sort of white sand beach stretches all the way eastward along the upper northwest curve of Florida and down, you know, down toward Tampa and environs. It's all just exquisite. But, you know, you can stand at Gulf Shores, Alabama, watching dolphins and porpoises go by, as was the case with my lovely wife 11 years ago now. She wanted to go on the dolphin cruise, but we didn't quite have the scratch for that. So instead, we stood on the balcony of our hotel room, and she just looked out to sea, and pretty soon we saw a pod of them coming. And she said, look, I called them. They came to me. They knew I couldn't come to see them, so they came to me. It was a beautiful little moment. But also standing on that balcony, on a clear day or a not-so-clear day, and especially down at the Fort Morgan end of things, I don't know if you've ever been over that way, but the western end of the island that is Gulf Shores, you know, you don't even have to try. The daggum oil rigs are on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of those goes south, too bad. Thanks for playing. No more tourism for South Alabama.
Yeah. And I try to explain to these people, I said, do you have any idea of what this will mean? Because you people live off of your tourism. When you're no longer the sugar white beaches, people aren't going to come here. They're not going to put up with your crap. You're not that much fun. They're not coming down here to see you. They're coming down here to see the beaches.
Yeah, because considering, well, it's a little unfair, but you can see wingnuts and rednecks all over the South.
Exactly. I mean, did you ever see that English program, Top Gear, where they went through Alabama?
No.
With all these wonderful signs like, what was it? Nancy Pelosi for president, stuff like that. And they were wondering because people were driving by and pointing shotguns out their window at them. And they rapidly had to get rid of all these wonderful scribblings on their cars because people were going to kill them. But they don't realize this place really is deliverance. Hello? When you're driving around down here, you damn well better have dueling banjos playing on the stereo.
Or at least a gun rack.
Yeah.
Even a gun rack in the back in the back of your old Chevy Impala, the gun rack.
Yeah. I mean, these people are insane. They are totally and completely insane.
But see, Cossack, you have a different perspective because if I recall correctly, In the local parlance, you ain't from around there.
No, I ain't from these parts.
And if you live there for 100 years, you'll still be not from around here.
Yeah. Well, I still have half an operating brain somewhere in there. And I can see that voting for the Uber class isn't going to do a damn thing for me because, you know, the Uber class doesn't give a flying you-know-what about me and my type. You know, and yet these idiots keep voting constantly for the same machine politicians. I guess kind of like what the situation is in West Virginia. People can't seem to realize that you need to vote for your own interests, not to support these idiots who are so filthy rich, they don't even know what money is.
But see, after in excess of 100 years of occupation in West Virginia, many of us have lost the urge to be free. That's the truth. We have in this state a slave mentality. And that is what the South is transforming into as well.
That's true. Unfortunate, true. Like, I forget where I read it. I'll have to go dig it out. I think it was either David Sirota or Dave Swanson who wrote a wonderful piece about the mentality, if you will, of Ayn Rand and where, you know, where she comes from mentally. And her, the person that she was, that she has modeled all of her male role models on was essentially a serial killing psychopath in the 20s who did such wonderful things as he kidnapped a little 12-year-old girl, held her for ransom, murdered her, chopped her up, and only brought the head and the torso to deliver to the father, which he stitched back together real quick. And he stitched wires into her eyelids to keep her eyes open so it looked like she was alive at a distance. And this is the man that she wrote Peons to, because he was a true Superman. He didn't care about anybody else. Oh, jeez. These are the people that the Tea Partiers put up on a pedestal. Do you have any idea of what you're saying?
I know.
Lord.
I know. It makes your eyeballs roll into the back of your head and your brains feel like marbles inside a washing machine drum, doesn't it? It's
yeah.
Astonishing.
I mean, I thought the whole point behind being human was the idea that we could cooperate, we could feel one another's pain, we could empathize, we could help other people. We could help people like ourselves do better, feel better, be better. How can you not care about someone else? You know, I thought that was the definition of a psychopath. You know, to have no empathy whatsoever for someone else's feelings.
That is. It is. It absolutely is. And frankly, sociopathy and psychopathy are running rampant these days. If you, for instance, get an email from me, you will find my signature quote now is that line that I pulled from Kurt Vonnegut's "God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater," because it just crawled all over me, Cossack. It did, and that is this: a normal person, because this thing is so damn deep. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. And, you know, I don't use that quote, Cossack, because I think that I'm something special and that I've got it over. Look at me with the great big conscience. No, I put myself in that group. I put us all in that group. Because if we were, and I'm not even functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society. I'm scraping my knuckles raw. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, if you stand in the grocery store and you pick up a can, a jar, a bottle, a package of anything, by virtue of the system in which we live, you are somewhere along the process that has put that into your possession has involved the doing of some level of manifest evil to someone somewhere. And it is inescapable. You can't get around it. And so, like I said, I include myself in that statement. Can hardly hear his conscience at all. And we have the nerve to act surprised that this country dysfunctions the way that it does? How? What kind of hubris are we engaging in that we fool ourselves into thinking that somehow we are above or beyond or beside any of that? The most that we can do is engage in a little bit of activism here and there. You know, our good friend Tom out in California kindly sent me along a copy of it's a very thin little book, but it's a delightful book. Michael Pollan's Food Rules, an Eater's Manual. And it's full of all kinds of good advice. Don't eat anything your great grandmother wouldn't recognize as food.
There you go.
Avoid food products containing ingredients that no ordinary human would keep in the pantry. You know, because if you've got ethoxylated diglycerides in the spice cabinet, you don't live in a house, you live in a chemistry lab.
Correct.
Avoid food products containing ingredients that a third grader cannot pronounce. You know, by the time you get to third grade, you should be able to read the word carrot, even if Reverbo doesn't like them. You should be able to read broccoli. You should probably be able to read mayonnaise.
Yeah.
But in third grade, you're not going to be able to read because I by God, can barely read it myself. You cannot read ethoxylated diglycerides. And how the hell do you pronounce the X in xanthan gum? Or calcium propionate? Ammonium sulfate?
Ugh.
But I guarantee you that, well, I mean, I don't have to guarantee you. You know, you've been to the store. We've all been to the store, Cossack.
Mm-hmm.
When that crap is in the food, that means that the food is being tortured. And the food is being tortured because of the overall transportation and export and import system that we have imposed upon it. And that means that somewhere somebody's getting the shaft so that your peanut butter can be a little bit sweeter.
What's the old saying, never eat anything larger than your head?
I think that one may be in here, too. There's all kinds. Here, Rule 20. And these things are also elegantly simple, Cossack. Rule 20. It's not food if it arrived through the window of your car.
There you go.
Unless it happens to be a rogue turkey on the fly. Oh, wait a minute. Les Nessman told us, as God is my witness. No, that was the big guy. As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. So it ain't, no, not even the turkey. Hey, Cossack, I got to run along, guy. But it's been a great conversation. Have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too, Bob.
All right, later. Bye now. That's the Cossack calling from North Florida, and onward we go. Or not. Or not. And not neither. No patience. Well, that having been said, let me go back for a minute to Representative Trent Franks, who manages to speak and not sound like what he really is. He needs to have that gummy, gooey Strom Thurmond accent so we can all recognize him for the evil son of a bitch that he is. Far more of the African-American community is being devastated by the policies of today than were being devastated by the policies of slavery, and that in regard to abortion. Holy mackerel. In other words, as judged on a relative scale, slavery was better than some things. That's what Representative Trent Franks of Arizona said. And extend this, using the Kurt Vonnegut quote, extend this to his constituency, because he won by some form of majority in that district in Arizona. He didn't just say that. The majority of some district in Arizona just said that. Because they are, whether they like it or not, whether you like it or not, whether we like it or not, we are responsible for the utterances of our elected representatives. This guy thinks that there was something to be said for slavery, and that some part of that something was relatively good. Well, I want to take you for a minute back in time. It's about 1876. This won't take too long. If you want to light up the phones again and you've got the patience, please do so. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. I want to take you back to about 1876 and another hero of this program, Mr. Samuel Clemens. It's a short story. It's called The True Story. I don't think Mr. Clemens ever named anything else The True Story or anything approaching it. And I want to set out an advisory or a caveat or a warning or whatever. What I'm about to do and the way I'm about to read it has absolutely nothing to do with mockery. Samuel Clemens had quite possibly the most pitch-perfect ear for dialect of his or any other generation. And so when you hear me read and you hear a certain voice, it's because Mr. Clemens wrote it that way, and he wrote it that way for a reason. I'd like to dedicate this reading of Samuel Clemens's The True Story to Representative Trent Franks of some godforsaken hole in the planet district in Arizona and all the putrid piece of shit sons of bitches who elected him and continue to elect him. Hint, newsflash, I hate your guts. By Samuel Clemens, The True Story. It was summertime and twilight. We were sitting on the porch of the farmhouse on the summit of the hill, and Aunt Rachel was sitting respectfully below our level on the steps, for she was our servant and colored. She was of mighty frame and stature. She was 60 years old, but her eye was undimmed and her strength unabated. She was a cheerful, hearty soul, and it was no more trouble for her to laugh than it is for a bird to sing. She was under fire now, as usual, when the day was done. That is to say, she was being chafed without mercy and was enjoying it. She would let off peal after peal of laughter, and then sit with her face in her hands and shake with throes of enjoyment which she could no longer get breath enough to express. It was such a moment as this. In such a moment as this, a thought occurred to me, and I said, Aunt Rachel, how is it that you've lived 60 years and never had any trouble? She stopped quaking. She paused, and there was a moment of silence. She turned her face over her shoulder toward me and said without even a smile in her voice, Mr. Clemens, is you in honest? It surprised me a good deal, and it sobered my manner and my speech, too. I said, why, you can't have had any trouble. I've never heard you sigh, never seen your eye when there wasn't a laugh in it. She faced fairly around now and was full earnestness. Has I had any trouble, Mr. Clemens? I was going to tell you, did I leave it to you? I was born down amongst the slaves. I knows all about slavery, because I've been one of my own self. Well, so my old man, that's my husband, he was loving and kind to me, just as kind as you is to your wife. We had children, 7 children, and loved them children just the same as you loves your children. They was black, but the Lord can't make children so black but what their mother loves them and wouldn't give them up. No, not for anything that's in this whole world. Well, sir, I was raised in old Virginia, but mother, she was raised in Maryland, and my soul, she was terrible when she'd get started. My land, but she'd make the fur fly. When she'd get into them tantrums, she always had one word that she said. She straightened herself up and put her fists on her hips and say, I want you to understand that I wasn't born in the mash to be fooled by trash. I was one of the old blue hen's chicken's eyes. Because, you see, that's what folks down born in Maryland calls themselves, and they's proud of it. Well, that was her word. And I don't ever forget it because she said it so much. And because she said it one day when my little Henry tore his wrist awful and most busted his head right up the top of his forehead, and the niggas didn't fly around fast enough to tend to him. And when they talked back to her, she up and she says, look here, she said, I want you niggas to understand that I wasn't born in the mash to be fooled by trash as one of the old blue hen's chicken's eyes. And then she cleared that kitchen and bandaged up the child herself. So I said that word, too, when I was riled. Well, by and by, my old mister says she broke, and she got to sell all the niggers on the place. And when I hear that, they're going to sell us all off to auction in Richmond. Oh, the good gracious, I know what that means. Aunt Rachel had gradually risen while she warmed to her subject, and now she towered above us black against the stars. They put chains on us and put us on a stand as high as this porch, 20 foot high, and all the people stood round, crowds and crowds, and they'd come up and look at us all round and squeeze our arm and make us get up and walk and then say, this one too old, or this one lame, or this one don't amount to much. And they sold my old man and took him away, and they began to sell my children and take them away, and I began to cry. And the man says, shut your damn blubbering, and hit me in the mouth with his hand. And when the last one was gone but my little Henry, I grab him close to my breast, so, and I rise up and I says, you shan't take him away. I says, I killed a man to touch him. I says, my little Henry whisper and say, I'm going to run away. And then I work and buy your freedom. Oh, bless the child. He always so good. But they got him. They got him, the men did. But I took and tear the clothes most off of them and beat them over the head with my chain. And they give it to me, too, but I didn't mind that. Well, there was all my old man gone and all my children, all my 7 children. And 6 of them I ain't set eyes on again to this day. And that's 22 years ago, last Easter. The man that bought me belonged in New Bern, and he took me there. By and by, the years rolled by, and the war come. And my ma said he was a Confederate colonel, and I was his family's cook. So when the Unions took that town, they all run away and left me all by myself with the other niggas in that monstrous big house. So the big Union officers move in there, and they ask me, would I cook for them? Lord bless you, says I, that's what I was for. They weren't no small fry officers, mind you. They was the biggest they is, and the way they made them soldiers and mosey around, Jenna, he told me to boss that kitchen, and he say, if anybody come meddling with you, you just make them walk chalk. Don't you be afeard, he say. You's among friends now. Well, I thinks to myself, if my little Henry ever got a chance to run away, he'd make it to the north, of course. So one day I comes in there where the big officers was in the parlor, and I drops a kerchief and I up and told them about my Henry. They are listening to my troubles just the same as if I was white folks. And I says, what I come for is because if he got away and got up north where your Jimmy comes from, you might have seen him, maybe, and could tell me so as I could find him again. He's very little, and he had a scar on his left wrist and at the top of his forehead. Then they look mournful, and the general says, how long since you lose him? And I say, 13 years. Then the general say, he wouldn't be little no more now. He a man. I never thought of that before. He was only that little fella to me yet. I never thought about him growing up and being big. But I see it then. None of the gemmen had run across him, so they couldn't do nothing for me, but all that time, though I didn't know it, my Henry was run off to the north years and years, and he was a barber, too, and worked for himself. And by and by, when the war come, he ups and he says, I was done barbering. He says, I was going to find my old mammy, lest she dead. So he sold out and went to where there was a recruiting and hired himself out to the colonel for his servant, and then he went all through the battles everywhere hunting for his old mammy. Yes, indeedy, he'd hire the first one officer, then another, till he ransacked the whole South. But you see, I didn't know nothing about this. How's I going to know it? Well, one night we had a big soldier ball. The soldiers that Newburn was always having balls and carrying on. They had them in my kitchen heaps of times because it was so big. Mind you, I was down on such doings because my place was with the officers, and it rasped me to have them common soldiers cavorting around my kitchen like that. But I always stood around and kept things straight, I did. And sometimes they'd get my dander up, and then I'd make them clear the kitchen. I tell you. One night, it was a Friday night, there comes a whole platoon from a nigger regiment that was on guard the house. The house was headquarters, you know, and then I was just biling mad. I was just a booming. I swelled round and swelled round. I was just a itching for them to do something for to stop me. And they was a waltzing and a dancing, but they was having a time. And I just a swelling and a swelling up. Pretty soon, long comes such a spruce young nigger sailing down a room with a yaller winch round her waist, and round and round and round they went, enough to make a body drunk to look at them. And when they got abreast of me, they went to kind of balancing round first on one leg, then on t'other, and smiling at my big red turban and making fun. And I ups and I said, "Get on with you, rubbish." The young man's face kind of changed all of a sudden for about a second, but then he went to smiling again, same as he was before. Well, about this time, in comes some niggas that played music and belonged to the band, and they never could get along without putting on airs. And the very first air they put on that night, I lit into them. They laughed, and that made me worse. The rest of the niggas got laughing, and then my soul lied, but I was hot. My eye was just a-blazing. I just straightened myself up so, just as I is now, plumb to the ceiling most, and I digs my fists into my hips, and I says, "Look here!" I says, "I want you niggas to understand that I won't bone in the mash be fooled by trash. That's one of the old blue hen's chicken's eyes." And then I see that young man stand a-staring and stiff, looking kind of up the ceiling like he forgot something and couldn't remember it no more. Well, I just march on them niggas, so looking like a general, and they just cave way before me, come out at the door. And as this young man are going out, I hear him saying another day, "Jim," he says, "you go along and tell the captain I'll be on hand about 8 o'clock in the morning. There's something on my mind." He says, "I don't sleep no more this night. You go along," he says. "Leave me by my own self." It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. About 7, I was up on hand getting the officer's breakfast. I was stooping down by the stove just so, same as if your foot was the stove. And I'd opened the stove with my right hand, so pushing it back just as I pushes your foot. And I just got the pan of hot biscuit out in my hand, was about to raise up when I see a black face come round under mine. And the eyes are looking up into mine just as I was looking up close to under your face now. And I just stopped right there and never budged. Just gazed and gazed so. And the pan began to tremble. And all of a sudden I knowed. The pan dropped on the floor, and I grab his left hand and shove back his sleeve just so, just as I was doing to you. And then I goes for his forehead and push the hair back. And so, "Boy," I says, "if you ain't my Henry, what is you doing with this welt on your wrist and that scar on your forehead? The Lord God of heaven be praised, I got my own again." Oh, no, Mr. Clemens. I ain't had no trouble and no joy. The only thing that Samuel Clemens ever wrote and called a true story and Trent Franks has the nerve, the sick, miserable, unmitigated, God-forsaken, demon-inspired gall to suggest, to hint, to intimate that that the African American community in the United States of America in 2010 is being more beset by the policies of today than were devastated or harmed by slavery. And he followed that statement by saying, and I think, what does it take to get us to wake up? Wake up to what, Representative Franks? Wake up into your sick, twisted, sheet-wearing, cross-burning, goddamn nightmare? I swear to God, if I ever saw this man in person, I wouldn't be able to stop myself from at least telling him to go to hell. I'm a nonviolent person. I don't do violence. But how can you... How can any member of the House of Representatives stand to be within 20 feet of a piece of evil garbage like that? How can the people who work in the Capitol cafeteria stand to reach food across to a miserable piece of human filth like Representative Trent Franks? I ask you. Because, like you, I could not. I could not. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
Hey, Matt, what's up?
Oh, a lot going on today. I know you can't get to it all, but I thought I would call in and give you some breaking news here. You heard about Jim Bunning today.
Tough shit. Yeah, tough shit Bunning.
Yeah. It turns out that there's more, okay? Apparently, Mr. Bunning has also shut down the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Oh, has he?
Yes, this is being reported by Bob Seska. He's another banter media writer, just like me and Mike Stark. It says here that he's got sources telling him the DOT is going to have to shut down and furlough employees. Here's the rundown. No reimbursements to states for previously committed federal highway funds. Federal Highway Administration will not be able to approve any expenditures from the Highway Trust Fund beginning on Monday, March 1st. This will prohibit them from reimbursing states for any previously committed federal highway funds. No ability to commit additional federal highway funds due to both the statutory prohibition and the furlough of its employees. Will be unable to approve states' commitment of any federal highway funds. No ability to commit additional federal transit funds. FTA will be unable to approve any new transit grants from all transit programs that are funded out of the Highway Trust Fund. So, yeah, furloughs, Damage and Recovery Act, yeah, the NHTSA State Highway Safety Grant programs are shutting down. And this just broke on Huffington Post from Arthur Delaney. It says that thanks to the Senate inaction, 1.5 million people will be unable to watch local TV stations starting Monday.
Now, wait a minute, Matt. It's one thing if the Department of Transportation shuts down. But but if America gets its TV box taken away from it, there could be rioting.
There could be rioting. Yes, there could be riots. One of the things that, one of the extensions that it didn't pass because of this joker is, it says here, satellite television extension that lets people in rural areas watch local TV via satellite. So at midnight Sunday night, about 1.5 million people are no longer going to be able to watch local programming. Your local news and whatnot.
So, like, if something god-awful happens in one of those communities, they'll never know about it until it's too late.
Right, exactly.
Thanks, Senator Bunning.
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? You know, I've been reading, you know, last time we talked, I told you I've been reading The Atlas Shrugged, which is probably the worst book I've read since I read Battlefield Earth. That I thought.
Yeah, you gotta. Yeah, you know what? I've often looked for something to which to compare that god awful POS book, and that's it. Battlefield Earth, Atlas Shrugged, and And look, oh my God, Matt, you're onto something.
Well,
Atlas
yeah,
shrugged, and sure. it engendered a vicious, sick, hateful little cult of followers, who, oddly enough, amassed great wealth, and Battlefield Earth, which amassed a sick, hateful little cult of followers that have amassed great wealth and jumped on Oprah's couch.
Right, yes. Because, you know, the whole point of L. Ron Hubbard starting a religion was to keep his crappy fiction in print. That's the only reason. I go to the bookstore. There is a whole line of books. There's like 10 books across of L. Ron Hubbard's novels, and these are not even like the Dianetics and all that kind of stuff. These are basically pulp novels that he wrote in the 30s and 40s. And I pick one up and start reading just in the middle of it, and it's just god-awful claptrap. And I pick another one up. And
why couldn't a full-on
reading? It's claptrap.
Why couldn't a full-on cult form around Dune?
See, there you go. I might join a cult based on Moadib.
Me too.
That would be cool. But no.
I mean, you know, when you got something that's got things like God made Arrakis to test the faithful. You know, you can work with that stuff.
Yes, you can work with that.
Fear is the mind killer?
Fear is the mind killer. I quote that all the time because it's true. Panic will never save you.
So I guess we can assert that, what, Frank Herbert was too smart by half or too good a writer by half?
Frank Herbert was an excellent writer. I've read his short stories. He was an amazing science fiction writer. He was 100 times the science fiction writer of Ayn Rand and Mr. L. Ron Hubbard put together. But there's no cult around him.
Sorry, no.
So I was reading Atlas Shrugged. And, you know, part of the plot, which if your readers haven't read it, part of the plot is that John Galt and all of his guys are basically helping the world to come to a screeching halt. It's sort of this Malthusian view of the...
Right. They are, in a word, terrorists. They are economic terrorists.
They're economic terrorists. They're blowing up trains and things like that to bring the world to a screeching halt so that all of the looters, as Ayn Rand calls them, the people who mooch, won't have anything to mooch off of. They're the super beings going on strike. That whole Nietzschean man and Superman thing, she's really just... Yeah, it's man and Superman stuff. It's Nietzschean stuff, and not even as good as Nietzsche. But I'm reading this, and at the same time, I'm reading about the Department of Transportation. I'm reading about the TV thing. I'm reading about Mr. Bunning. I'm thinking, yes, that's the plan. Bring it all to a screeching halt. But again, I don't think it has quite the ending that they want it to have.
I mean, isn't that the same as drown the government in a bathtub?
Yeah, it's similar to drown a government in a bathtub, yes.
I rest my case.
Yeah. You can basically rest your case on their actions. You don't have to read anything into this. That's the great part. You don't have to put anything there, Bob. You just have to say what it is that they say and do. It's their own actions and words that speak for them. It's kind of like when people talk about Media Matters. Oh, Media Matters is awful. Well, what does Media Matters do? They record these guys, their own words, their own faces, in context, and post them on the Internet. That's all they do. What's so horrible about that? Is it horrible that they put it on the Internet? What? What's so horrible about that? But I'm very upset because Mr. Bunning has cut off an extension of unemployment benefits and COBRA.
Yes.
And, you know, actually my girlfriend's mom, I don't know if...
He has basically, I mean, let's be clear about it. He has, for all intents and purposes, with one, at least one out of the millions of people who are afflicted in this country right now, Senator Jim Bunning has committed murder.
Yes. One senator against 99. What the heck is with this Senate?
Okay, can I... You know, I come from the when life gives you lemons, make lemonade movement, right? Could it be, and I know the gravity of this situation, so I don't laugh, okay? I've sweated out waiting to see whether or not there's going to be another week of unemployment benefits. I've been there. But you will pardon me, for just bathing in the delicious irony, Matt, of the image of Senator Jim, screw you all, I'll hold up anything I want to, Inhofe, working to end Bunning's filibuster so the highway funding won't expire.
That's a delicious irony. You're absolutely right.
And just to take it one step further, and I can't morally do this, but I can say that from a political standpoint, and this proves how evil and wicked politics can be, maybe this is the one defining moment that puts the knife in the heart of Republican obstructionism. And I'll go one step further. Maybe Jim Bunning knows that. Because Jim Bunning is an old major league pitcher, no matter how god-awful crazy he is. And he knows what to throw to a batter when the batter's thinking fastball and the bottom drops out of what's coming at him. Okay? To expand away from that, Jim Bunning wouldn't pee in Mitch McConnell's mouth if Mitch McConnell was on fire. Jim Bunning is on the way out the door. Jim Bunning's on the way out the door because Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, made damn sure of it. This may be Jim Bunning for ostensibly respectable conservative principles, so, you know, quote unquote. This may be Jim Bunning using those very conservative principles to set fire to the Republican Party in the Senate, to set fire to the filibuster.
You're putting a finger right on a very interesting point, Bob. Okay, we had Chris Dodd. He said, I'm not running for re-election. What did he do? He immediately turned around and said, I'm not working with Richard Shelby anymore. We're moving ahead with Consumer Finance Protection Agency. Then you've got, you know, other senators talking about, well, re-election's not that important to me. Democrat, Maria Cantwell, I think it was, said, re-election's not that important to me. And immediately started advocating pretty well in the Senate. And you even have, I can't even remember his name now, the guy who Blagojevich appointed in Obama's seat, who isn't going anywhere. He's not going to be sticking around. But he's actually started to say some good things ever since he figured that out. You know, it's like once you take off the whole re-election weight, I don't know, maybe these people start to perform better. I don't know. Maybe it is.
Evan Bayh.
I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory and I'm going to take the Republican Party with me. I don't know. I'm sorry, you're saying something?
No, I was just, you've got Roland Burris in Illinois. You've got Evan Bayh. You've got Jim Bunning doing this. And look at, you know, Scott Brown in Massachusetts is under no misapprehensions. He knows that he's going to spend perhaps 2 years in the United States Senate and that will entitle him to be called Senator, for the rest of his days, as was the case with Senator Clark, from Montana that I mentioned at the top of the program. But the fact of the matter is, you know, even Scott Brown turned around and voted against an ideologically pure Republican position. There's something. It's something that I've heard people heading for retirement say. I'm about to become dangerous.
It's true. It's true. And you know, I said a few weeks ago when the jobs bill. I remember how Harry Reid took the jobs bill, he stripped off a bunch of stuff, he passed a narrower jobs bill.
Yeah.
And I said at the time that the whole idea here is that by dividing it up into not one omnibus jobs bill that you can, you know, filibuster forever. You divide it up into several bills, and then you make Republicans do exactly this sort of thing. It's the optic. It's saying, we're going to have some moments now that are going to hit you at re-election time. We're going to have your words appearing in ads all over the country, in your districts. Your words are going to come back to haunt you. It's starting to come together. And even Harry Reid, Mr. Spineless Jellyfish Harry Reid, is suddenly, you know, talking about reconciliation and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I think we're getting kind of a sea change in D.C. right now.
There may be, Matt. You know, the proof is always going to be in the pudding, but, you know, there may be some little beads of sweat popping out on some foreheads up there.
It's sort of like going ahead and having your 1995 without your 1994. Maybe having 1995 is the way to not have your 1994.
That may very well be.
If your listeners recall, you know, back in 1994, of course, there was the Republican Revolution that took over Congress. The following year, Newt got upset because he was at the back of Air Force One, so he decided to shut down the federal government, and it wound up hurting congressional Republicans. They were the ones seen as obstructionists. You may be seeing the 1995 without the 1994. I don't know. I've been known to be wrong before, but it's...
Yeah, but God, it's worth hoping for.
It's worth hoping for. Well, I'm going to get off the phone. I am having a birthday weekend.
Oh, yay. Well, yay Matt's birthday.
I have got to go out and have some fun now, but I just wanted to...
You know, I hate it when I have to go out and have fun. You know, it's so much trouble.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's so much easier just to stay in and be morose.
All right, Bob. Well, I'll let you get to your next caller.
Well, have some fun. Have some fun on my behalf, please, Matt, because ain't nobody going nowhere around here in this damn snow.
That's true.
All right.
Down here, we've had snow. It's been a cold winter.
Happy birthday to you, Matt Osborne.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Matt Osborne, Southeast correspondent for The Horn. Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Osborne, Inc. And we roll along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bonjour, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen. I am so, I should be stunned, but do the Democrats not think that people who lose their benefits aren't going to blame them? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Procedure my ass. The Republicans aren't in power. And I know the Republicans have a stranglehold on power, like we discussed before, but the Democrats are the ones in charge, and they're going to adjourn with 1.2 million people, you know, wondering what the F's going to happen next.
That
generates a lot of goodwill and people rushing to vote for them, don't it?
Oh, every time I get hold of a little bit of hope, you come cut the line.
I'm
playing, but no, it's true. And look, I say this about Jim Bunning, and there's a reality that it could be politically played that way, Sandra. But do the Democrats think that that's going to, you're right, do they think that that's going to happen when they... Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's like once again the sort of bubble. The bubble is just ginormous because that is not how people operate. Now maybe you and I, who are political junkies, blah blah blah, may look at that and think, oh my God, what an a-hole, can't believe it. But no, regular folks, they're just looking at something that ain't working and they can't solve a huge problem, like extending benefits for people who can't get a job. Because there aren't any jobs. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Where is this wonderful communicator, Obama? You see what I'm saying? This is a time when that kind of leadership is needed. Oh, but they're not bankers, the people who are unemployed, right? And I hate to be that base.
But you're not. You're not being base, Sandra. You are being realistic. Let's not leave anything out of the mix. Let's understand, if it hasn't already, that the Fulminators over at Fox will be on the air saying, well, you see, that good conservative Republican, Jim Inhofe, is trying to get Senator Bunning to stop.
Yeah, oh, no, all of it, I mean, it's just playing the Democrats for all it's worth, because they're too damn stupid to have held up all them fools. Let them use the bathroom in the Senate if they want to hold it up. You know what I mean? It's like, what is up with the inability for these people to play hardball? I mean, because this shit is war, and they want millions of people to what? See, some people don't understand the U.S. I was talking to a friend of mine in London. I said, oh, yeah, you don't have a job in this damn country. Your ass is effed. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, you can't, there is nothing but the abyss. There is no safety net. So when that little bit goes, really, what are these people supposed to do when that money stops? Right?
Well, you know, what did at the top of the program, what did that freak Senator Clark say? Let the future generations can damned well take care of themselves. Well, isn't that what the and as David queried again, how are the Republicans today any different from the Republicans of 100 years ago?
Oh, no, they're not, and it's just incredible. But what's really scary, though, is the passivity that's abound, you know, when you're like the sort of beat down. So with these million people, you know, nothing's in plain sight in America like it used to be, you know. And these people just put up with it, I guess. But I kind of think that, you know, we're talking about survival now. Because they're not getting these unemployment benefits just because they want to relax, you know, contrary to what they're
saying. Yeah, and, you know, live a life of 16 weeks of idle, indolent boredom. No.
Right, and, you know, and yeah, full disclosure, though, I mean, I think in the early 90s when I got back from England, I was like, ooh, I still qualify for unemployment benefits, and my ass did that, but that's just me. And it wasn't a huge recession. Because I thought, shit, I worked. Let me just milk this for a few weeks. We know this. But that's not me. I'm talking about what's happening now is that these people are desperate, you know?
Yeah, desperate like in power getting cut off, water getting cut off. We're not talking about somebody who's going to lose their HBO but still have basic cable.
Right, and also, you know, I just sort of, when I hear that kind of talk about how people are sort of, you know, want to use our wonderful welfare system, I mean, it's not really all that much, you know. You might be able to hang out for a minute, but these days things are so expensive, you can't, $300 some people are getting, maybe $250 a week, not that much.
Oh, yeah, it's capped at a ridiculously low percentage of average earnings. And you can't live on it. You can't go Yeah, I mean, if you go to the grocery store on it, you ain't paying your power bill. If you pay your power bill, you're not paying your water bill.
And a lot of times these are, you know, the main earners, you know, of the household now. You know, it's not like they were sharing expenses with other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we may have... during the economic miracle of the Bush year, Sandra, we talked about, you know, how George Bush went up to Minnesota and the woman told him about how she worked three jobs every day, and he said, well, she's uniquely American.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? She did, you know, she lost. There are people, you know, two wage earners and two jobs each, and you lose one and done.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even put my mind to what these people are thinking. That horrible senator, I mean, he's a jerk, but I don't understand what the Democrats, is it because they're senators and in Washington they just really could care less? They don't think their election prospects are going to be at risk? I mean, I don't understand. Because that's a lot of people.
Well, this is, and you know, some of this is rules-based stuff. But yeah, it's also a moment where leadership comes into play, Sandra.
Yeah. No, but it's rule. I understand this, but we're talking, this is, I consider this a massive problem, though.
It is a massive problem. And if the Senate Democrats allow themselves to walk away from it, they're earning the scorn of the American people. You're absolutely correct. And that's what I'm saying. Even if it's rules-based, what the hell good is Harry Reid if he won't say, okay, and get a resolution passed extending the session by a day, by 2 days, by three?
Well, that's, and Obama could easily step out of whatever he in and say, this is unacceptable and highlight it. You know, it wouldn't hurt him.
You know what, he has the power. He has the power to stand up and, to stand up and say, I'm calling upon the United States Senate to stay in session until such time as this legislation is passed.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, you know, there's all sorts, you know, when you talk about procedure, I mean, that's right there. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I really am not calling to bash Obama tonight. I just...
No, but these are just realities.
I was listening, you know, listening to the guy before you, and then I was thinking about, wow, 1.2 million, you know, just the sheer numbers. And I'm thinking, well, these people have been trying to find work. We know there's no work, you know what I mean?
Yeah, despite the Rush Limbaughs and Glenn Becks of the world who say, well, you know, if you extend unemployment benefits, that just means they're going to stay unemployed longer. You got to make the proles get back on their knees.
Well, now, didn't someone mention, use the word hobo recently?
Yes, as a matter of fact, they did. We are creating a generation of hobos.
Right, I'm thinking, what year?
1890.
Hobos, you know, jumping train cars, sticks with material tied on the end of it, right?
Yeah, whistling King of the Road, or, yeah.
Or that brother, can you spare a dime?
There you go.
Which, I mean, I quite like, don't get me wrong, that's one of my favorite tunes. It's great. You listen to the lyrics on that one? Damn. But,
Once I owned a railroad, made it run.
Yeah, right, you know, and the tower. No, that's right. That's a good subversive song. Love it. But, I'm stunned that the Democrats think that this is gonna, what are they gonna say? Oh, the Republicans did it? We've heard that song, seen that movie.
Yeah, we're in the majority, but they won't, but the minority won't let us.
I know, and it's just, I'm so sick of even discussing it because it's just, unbelievable. And is Obama about to go ahead and say, okay, you know, throw in the towel and say, let's just pass this now?
I don't know. But, you know, there's an interesting piece of research that sort of ties into all of this that was, I saw it yesterday over at Crooks and Liars, the usual good work by Susie Madrack. There's a new study out, and just quoting from the story, a growing body of research suggests that layoffs can have profound health consequences. One 2006 study by a group of epidemiologists at Yale found that layoffs more than double the risk of heart attack and stroke among older workers. Another paper published last year by Kate W. Strully, a sociology professor at the State University of New York, Albany, found that a person who lost a job had an 83% greater chance of developing a stress-related health problem like diabetes, arthritis, or psychiatric issues.
Yeah, and some of the stories I've read, like people talking about when they've been interviewed, the people who used to have jobs, now they don't, the sort of internalizations that's going on, too, it just makes me want to cry. The sort of what's wrong with me tinge to it all, you know? No tools or way of identifying exactly what is fucking you over.
Right, and I mean,
so
get this statistic, Sandra. Get this. During the recession in the early 1980s, remember the Reagan recession that nobody seems to recall?
Death
rates among high seniority male workers jumped by 50% to 100% in the year after a job loss, depending on the worker's age. Get this. Even 20 years afterward, deaths were 10% to 15% higher. That means a worker who lost his job at age 40 had his life expectancy cut by a year to a year and a half.
Oh, and also that same period, because I remember it well. You know, the kids who were coming out of college, coming into that horrible job market, now they're, you know, whatever, our age, your level of your ability to earn was like cut by like 30%. I mean, so these newbies who are trying to get work now, they're looking at just a huge hit financially and, you know, to their status. I mean, joblessness in America is a son of a bitch. It's horrible. Because that's all you got here is you know, you are what you work, you know. I'm not making any judgment call. I'm just saying that's just how it is here.
It's reality.
It's how it goes. And
you know, we're in the process of this in this country, Sandra. We are in the process of, frankly, staring into the abyss.
Yeah, not only that, but yeah, exactly. And that's what I keep saying to people. I'm like, what do you think goes on here when people lose their jobs? You know, this isn't Europe. And, you know, we were coasting along on this fake 5% bullshit saying we have a dynamic economy, so da-da-da-da-da. You can get a job when it ends. What's happening now? We have high unemployment, no dynamic economy, and no safety net. I mean, that doesn't add up to be a good time for me.
It, no, nor I.
And you throw in the sort of mitigating the coercion of the state, that is, arms. Well, we could have some good times up in this country coming up. But it's
sobering. It's sobering. I mean, the list of stuff that gets affected by what Bunning is being allowed to do should call. Well, it should cause people to sweat.
Well, yeah, and also I was reading, you know Wilson, I forget his name, he's the famous black psychologist from Harvard.
Yes.
Yeah, he's like in his 70s. I read something that he said recently, he's just like totally demoralized. He said what's going on in the inner cities, which is what this man studied his whole career, is like a throwback to like 50, you know, just 50 years, 60 years ago, Bob, what we're looking at coming up in the you know, in the black areas. And, the, you know, it's just stunning. We're looking at 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% unemployment coming up. It's unbelievable.
And not
this man was resigned. What I read, he just sounded demoralized. It was just sort of stunning to read and very frightening.
And it plays out in this country, Sandra, every day, day after day, place after place, time after time. And the United States Senate decides to take a break.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, and that's what I'm saying. It's like at the end of the day.
I mean, can we get one Democrat, and maybe I've just missed it and there has been, can we get one Democrat to stand up and say, hell no, let's stay here?
No, we get Evan Bayh who cries and takes their marbles home. That's what we get.
I mean, come on, anybody. Sherrod Brown?
I know.
Bernie Sanders? Russ Feingold? Anybody? No. Bueller?
Bueller. Don't know. I just sort of, and I just, you know, I can't, you know, I don't understand why the unemployment situation isn't, you know, it's a national emergency, as far as I can tell.
But, you know, we keep talking, you know, you said something a little bit ago and I responded, 1890, you know, where do these people want to go to? No, it ain't 1890. What we're witnessing here, Sandra, is the attempt to, you know, for all the, you can talk about how, you know, he got paid by the word and was dull as dishwater, to the culture that he lived and wrote in, Charles Dickens was an absolute activist. I mean, he was making Victorian England look at the horrors that it was perpetrating upon the working class. And what we're talking about here is a desire to drive America back to Dickensian times, where, you know, where you are what you work.
Oh, yeah, no, it's straight up Hayek, man, the road to serfdom. And, you know, he was saying it in terms of that Kenzie's going to do, but I'm saying in terms of what he's talking about, which is what you just said. Wherever you are, that's it. And don't look to anything, community, government, nothing.
you know, all of this is going down, and in for instance, as we've talked about before, Colorado Springs?
Yeah.
It's gonna get kind of creepy around there when the grass isn't cut.
No, and also, is that the same place that's turning off a third of the lights and shit?
Yeah.
The street lights, right?
Yeah, yeah. They've picked up the garbage cans in the park because the garbage will not be collected.
Yeah, I mean, this is also, you know, lag time, you know. It's like you had the recession, whatever, it's been going on for 3 years, and you have these cycles. So now we're in this horrific cycle of, you know, the states bottoming out. And there's no lifeline there. And I've said this to you before in conversations. This is some direct shit from Hoover time when he didn't extend the lifeline. I don't know what they're doing in Washington. I don't know what Obama's talking
about. It's just plain frightening. I don't want to sit here and say, you know, to the barricades or anything. But what does this look like? What does this look like? What? Because when you enter one of these, when you enter, and John Fox, being the audio guy that he is, you know, taught me these things. What happens when you enter, and you know, we talk about the same thing in climate. What happens when you enter a feedback loop, Sandra? Well, a feedback loop feeds on itself.
Mm.
And every loop is a little bit worse than the loop before it. So that if this thing via the failure to extend unemployment, if this thing gets going real good, it's going to spiral out of control faster than any of those cosseted punk ass the babies in the Senate can even begin to comprehend.
Well, see, that's the thing, because they may want to think, them and, you know, the Ayn Randians, that these people will just sort of roll away and die.
Let's extend the grand scope of this whole picture. When people began to complain about what Jim Bunning was doing, and, you know, millions of people being basically rendered penniless, do you know what his response was? Did you catch this, Sandra?
Well, it was tough shit, wasn't it?
Well, it was tough shit, but it was also something else. He said, well, I had to miss a UK basketball game.
Right. No, that's right. I was sort of, you know, kind of too, I couldn't believe it. The basketball came up. Yes. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, do we have to put one of those tall wigs on him before he becomes Marie Antoinette?
Exactly. You know, it's just sort of, what is that song that you know, out from the penthouse and into the ditch? Eat the Rich. Is that Cronus? You know that song?
Yes, I do.
I love that song. But it's just sort of, I tell you, it really, we could line up about four songs right quick that would just sort of say it all, and that's one of them. Oh, my God. But it's stunning. They're just pigs, you know?
And I guess the most frustrating thing is that they don't have to be. They don't have to be. No one's making them to be this way.
But the level of cruelty in this society now, having been fed this diet of me, 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 and F you, everybody else, for 3 decades, you know, it's all coming home to roost, because it's ugly that people can't even drum up enough support to deal with a problem like that. You know?
But all day long, I've seen stuff about Jim Bunning, okay?
Yeah, well.
But I haven't seen anybody saying why, and maybe it's just because I haven't hit the sites, but I haven't seen anybody saying, why is he being allowed to do this?
Well, not exactly. No, this is my thing out the gate. I mean, these characters, you know, the Senate is littered with these folks. But at the end of the day, the Democrats are in power, and these rules can be changed. Anything can happen. Give me a break.
You know, I did notice in the write-up over at Crooks and Liars, again, Susie Madrak, she's becoming a real go-to writer. She said she referenced the same thing that Matt did before you, that Bob Seska has rounded up some of the other funding that Jim Bunning is going to will have blocked. But then she adds parenthetically, and this is the only mention I've seen along these lines, parenthetically, she says, with the Jim Bunning just blocked, parenthetically, with the acquiescence of the Senate Democrats, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, and, you know, I keep going back to, you know, the Bernanke thing. It's like, oh, hold up. Sanders had a hold on this fool, and that's supposed to be sacrosanct, yet and still Reid said, oh, no, and this fool went through. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we know shit can change on a dime. You know, now Obama's thinking about, yeah, reconciliation after all. But wait a minute. Then you could pass a public option, couldn't you?
Yes, you could.
Oh, my God. So, no. Uh-uh. I'm not hearing it. I'm just hearing a bunch of BS. But I'm fearful, and I feel for these people who are about to get, what are they supposed to do, Bob, you know?
And I don't have the answer. And you don't either.
Freak me out.
You know, and again, well, hell, let's extend that Dickens metaphor then. Let's run over to A Christmas Carol. Are there no more poor houses? Have the workhouses closed down? That's where we're headed.
Oh, man. Well, with that in mind, you know, China, they can't find enough workers. I think that's quite interesting on a global front.
Yeah, and they, and it's not like they're well, I don't know. Maybe they are. You would think that China would have something approaching a limitless workforce.
Well, they decided they needed to create jobs in the interior because they don't really want people to overrun their one-party state, you know, bread and circuses. But anyway, I don't know. I'm just focused on that because I've been looking at, you know, I know with the unemployment, it may stop. You can get an extension. Then you look to the government and pray that, oh, can I get another 13 weeks? You know what I mean? And these poor people now have to spin out. I read somewhere that it'll probably be extended next week. Is that something that you heard?
I've seen it said, but...
But it's going to make the states pay a lot more to reconfigure it again or something?
Well, yeah, because if you let the damn thing sunset, and then you're reinventing the wheel.
Right.
And reinventing the wheel is always a costly process.
And so all this because, yeah, and to me it's just feckless and just weak-ass leadership. The weakest.
Yeah. Goodbye, Harry.
Anyway.
Goodbye, Harry. You know.
Oh, my God. He needs all of them. I'm just so sick of it. Hey, did you get that email I sent you?
Yeah, I did.
That's in Oakland, you know. It's just sort of, are you kidding me?
Well, God.
I mean, it's just kind of, Oakland is a hard-ass place. I used to live there. It's not that far from Sacramento. And those little stories, they get out like that. People really don't mess around. You know they will riot in Oakland, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of, yeah.
They don't give a F. And so I find it interesting that story got out because people are scrambling. I read a couple of quotes. They didn't really want that information out.
Well, and yeah, just to bring everybody else into the loop, reading from the story itself, Oakland parking officers were ordered to avoid forcing neighborhood park. I mean, this is astonishing. We're ordered to avoid enforcing neighborhood parking violations in two of the city's wealthier neighborhoods, but told to continue enforcing the same violations in the rest of the city.
And then the unions are ticket agency is like trying to come down hard on the whistleblowers, you know.
Right, and there's an object lesson out of this too, Sandra. In that, look who it was who is complaining about the fairness of the policy. It's not fair, said Chernell Smith, age 44, a parking officer for 22 years, who's lived in Oakland for 24 years.
Exactly.
Smith and here's the line. Smith and the union representing parking officers said the policy has resulted in tickets being issued disproportionately to poor Black and Latino people.
Yeah, I mean that's it's a small story, but it just there's so much there, you know, i.e. turning regular working people against themselves. You see what I mean? And expecting them to comply. Your ass ain't going to go to Piedmont and give a ticket? No, hell no. I'm up in Piedmont writing tickets. Hourly. You know what I mean? Screw that.
Oh, yeah, and went so far in the extension of this, went so far as creating a third shift, a graveyard shift, if you will, of ticket writers.
Right, and getting people, yeah, enforcing laws that ain't been enforced in years, you know, with people parking on the sidewalk a little, all the kind of stuff you do in your neighborhood. All of a sudden now you get $100 tickets? It's stunning. Anyway, yeah, I don't know, I just was... That one really didn't.
Who's, but, you know, the one thing that I didn't make, that I couldn't make in terribly clear, whose brilliant idea was this?
Whoever.
The city, it says the city council increased parking fines, meter rates, hours of enforcement, enforcement in neighborhoods.
No, that would just be something from, you know, whoever lays out the rules for each neighborhood. You know?
I mean, isn't there a mayor?
There is a mayor, and last I heard from him, he was sort of ran out, but after them officers were shot, and you remember there was, obviously you probably don't keep it open, but it's nonstop there. They shoot people on the BART, you know, officers being murdered. It's a pretty wild city. So the mayor was saying something, and they shut him up, and I haven't heard from him since. So who knows?
It's getting hot.
No, and of course, I'm a bit of a drama queen, but in all seriousness, Oakland is sort of, you know, it's a bit hot. Yeah, like you said.
And, there's stuff out there that I haven't even gotten to. I got a follow-up story from Texas Betsy on the Texas Terror pilot.
Oh, please.
You know what it was that cost him the thousands and thousands of dollars that he complained about in his little hate-filled screed? This guy tried to incorporate as a unit of the International Life Church.
What?
I don't know if you've ever heard of that outfit, but, you know, it's a total dodge. And it was a cheap little tax ripoff. And he tried to incorporate his house, Sandra. He tried to incorporate his house as a church, under the advice of this, you know, International Life Church, and consequently, I think it's part of his hatred, you know, the vulgar Catholic Church. I mean, you know, I can do that screed. I can do the vulgar Catholic Church, you know, kiddie diddling, the priestly rape, that kind of stuff. And I'm not real happy with the tax-exempt status of any church in the United States. But this guy flew a plane into a building because the IRS caught him trying to use his house as a tax dodge for a phony baloney religion. The guy was a crook. He was a fraud. He was a freak. And yet, Texas Betsy tells me that there were maybe 25 people at the candlelight vigil last night.
Oh, my God, I got to hang up. But you're kidding.
No. No. Not at all.
Oh, my God. Listen, Bob, have a good weekend.
You too, Sandra. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, I don't think Sandra was at all off base in pointing out the Oakland story, because it's a little nuts. Don't ticket the well-to-do folks. Go ticket the poor black folks and the poor Latino folks. She's right. You know, there's an element of Oakland, California that makes it sort of the canary of our national coal mine, so to speak. And the ugly coming may very well, and you know, this is not the part of the program where I encourage you to go and buy freeze-dried food. But the ugly coming, at least two rolls out of six on a single die, the ugly coming has the potential to be really, really ugly. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Ed.
How's it going?
Oh, getting along. How about you? Haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, just staying in close. Been having some problems with, you know, old age.
Yeah, well.
But, I just wondered what you thought about the health bill, where it's going, what's really going to be the bottom line in it. I got my ideas, but I
think the best that we can hope for is that some modification of the Senate bill gets passed by reconciliation, but I wouldn't take better than 2-1 odds on even that happening.
That's my thinking. I think that's what it's going to take to get anything, though.
Oh, reconciliation is the only way it can happen.
Yeah. But I just thought.
But the question, if you were listening to Sandra's call, it's hard looking at this situation where the Senate Democrats are willing to walk out on people who will literally be rendered penniless. If the Senate Democrats are willing to do that, how hard are they willing to work to make sure that some sort of health care reconciliation bill goes through?
I don't know. We got a bunch of sick puppies in for representation. I understand Rockefeller's not necessarily so hot for this way the bill is.
No. Rockefeller said outright, and, you know, if I were you, I'd call one of his offices and wear him out. Rockefeller said he absolutely is not in favor of doing anything by reconciliation in terms of the public option.
Yeah, well, I'll get a couple mail and a couple of us will call.
You know, we got 24 senators who have signed onto that letter saying they favor passing a public option by reconciliation. And Jay Rockefeller came out in response to that and just basically, you know, and I'm not trying to be crass or crude, Ed, but just basically peed in everybody's Wheaties.
Yeah. That's what I understand. And that's very disappointing after, you know, he supported some basic stuff that Hillary Clinton and him had going a few years ago. I'm disappointed. But I'll tell you the thing that gets me is this James Carville's wife. I can't, Madeline, whatever.
Mary Madeline, yeah.
Did you hear her latest statement?
No. I'm almost afraid. What'd she say?
They had two guests on one of the programs, and she made the statement that Democrats didn't know how to create jobs. And you talk about, you know, and it stunned whoever the other guy was that was talking. I would have loved to give her the answer to that, you know, at least. We may not be able to create any, but we didn't have all of them shipped overseas and subsidize the companies tax with our tax dollar to do it. I'll tell you, Democrats do not even know how to answer these scumbags. I don't see them doing it very, Obama's the only one that can cut them off and butcher them at the same time and set them up like he does. But that I've seen, he done a good number on old McCain. He sat there like a big puffed up elephant after Obama done a number on him. I don't know if he watched that or not, but I enjoyed the way he handled himself in that. And the Republicans have come out saying that they won. How did they win? There wasn't nothing to win.
Well, it's kind of like winning a preseason NFL football game.
Yeah, and they didn't do it anyway. You know, they got some good licks in to start off, but that damn drunk Boehner and that pimp they got in there for the minority whip, old Eric Cantor. I'm telling you, it's a disgusting. It makes you want to just pull in your horns and do the best you can and stay out of it altogether without getting your blood pressure up and staying mad all the time.
Well, and there's a hell of a lot to be said for that, Ed. But if you're aware, if the light's on for you, it's hard not to pay attention.
Yeah.
And you know, for God's sakes, when you watch the Democratic Party, and I direct this toward the Democratic Party in the United States Senate, when you watch them being just absolutely shoved around by a bunch of nothing but bullies, It's awful. It's awful hard to sit still and stomach it, isn't it? And it does. It drives my blood pressure up.
I couldn't. I'd get thrown out the first day because I'd knock some people's front part of their mouth loose. I can't take the kind of stuff that goes on like that. I get aggravated, and that owl-faced looking Mitch McConnell, wouldn't it be great just to slap him open-handed right across the mouth? That might straighten his face up a little bit. They're disgusting, and I know a lot of the listeners don't like to hear that kind of talk, but I really get fighting mad when I see the stuff that's going on and them capitalist pimps, that's all they are, corporation for corporations, and bought and paid for and puppets for them. It's discouraging to see that stuff go on and hold still for it. And I sure understand why people get them a gun and go in and butcher a bunch of them for the way they do that. And I'm not advocating.
But that's the thing, Ed. They don't do that. You know, like this idiot flying his airplane into the building in Austin. You know, that's taking out working people.
Yeah.
You know, not anybody that actually is responsible for. And this guy was no hero. He was a coward and a fraud. I feel like I'm walking a very fine line here. There, you know, working folks are gunning down working folks, and you know what? The bosses love that.
Yeah, they're sitting back enjoying it, pitting one worker against another is what it amounts to. Same old game, different approach.
Yeah, 1890.
Yeah. Well. It went on.
Ed, how is it that you and I can figure this out on a radio program, and there's a bunch of silk suit types in Washington D.C. who can't?
Bob, there's two kinds of people. Don't mean they're smart, and that's college graduates and rich people. If rich people just means they got money, it don't make them smart. So when you can accept those two things, and I'm not. Low-rating college people and college graduates, usually they're taught to think, but it ain't showing up. Because most of those people have gone to either a critical education program or at least college, you know. So there's not much excuse for their ability to think, but they have got their mind closed off to what they're going to do, and the door closes on how much money have you got, which how many lobbyists is for this, and how much can we get out of them. That's the name of their game. And it's not just on the national level. It's on the...
Feels kind of nasty, doesn't it?
And you know what? It's almost like tying your hands and getting slapped. Almost. Except if they did that, I would take things... little pretty serious, but it's just about that bad. You feel like you can see what's going on. You're getting urinated on, but you can't do nothing about it.
And they've got the unmitigated gall while they're peeing on your shoes to tell you that it's raining.
Yeah,
I know.
Right.
Ed, I got to roll on. We're at the end of the show, but it's awful good to hear from you.
Okay, Bob.
All right.
Call sometime.
You know what? I sure will. I'm sorry I haven't. We'll talk soon.
Phone boat works both ways, and I haven't called, so I'll talk to you.
Well,
later.
Both of us probably been shoveling some snow, so I understand.
All right. Hi to your family and all your listeners.
All right. Thanks, Ed. Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now. You know, I reckon this weather's been kind of hard on Ed because Ed's a brilliant golfer. And I don't care if you've got one of them fluorescent Day-Glo orange balls, they ain't going anywhere in this stuff. So that's it. That's it for the weekend. Hey, listen quickly. Do not forget Action Point with Cynthia Black coming your way tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Be there. Aloha. Preceded by The Rick Smith Show from Pennsylvania. Great programming. John Fox and All Foxed Up on Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. begins another week of Conversation Radio live and unrestrained. And just one for you, just to close things out, a reminder, if I may, or a warning. Please take heed when buying Kraft products, K-R-A-F-T, Kraft. The federal government has just found out that a tomato broker who sells stuff to Kraft took payoffs to buy tainted food. It'll be a while before I buy anything Kraft. And this as well, just because, you know, it's dinner time somewhere and I gotta spoil it. This is just icky, but so true. Anybody buy Girl Scout cookies? Well, a whole lot of people are complaining about a foul taste and nasty odor coming from box after box after box after box of, and I hope you didn't buy any, lemon cream Girl Scout cookies. The company responsible for baking them says there could be over 600,000 boxes of these rancid little morsels. And they say that the foul taste and odor is coming from oils breaking down that aren't up to their quality standards. Gee, I wonder if any Kraft bakeries are responsible for this. I don't know. That aren't up to their quality standards, but they stress that the cookies are safe to eat. So they stink, and they taste nasty, but they're safe to eat. They're $3 a box. Yeah, corporate America says, go ahead and eat them. No matter how bad they smell and taste. And, you know, maybe after you stop getting your unemployment, you might have a few boxes of these laying around, and you can eat those. As Sue notes, go ahead and make a big old pot of coffee to drink with them. And use a smelly sweat sock as a filter for the grounds. If you get really lucky, you can wipe your mouth on a napkin came from the paper factory smelling like butt. Oh, the corporate America we live in. What a charm, what a joy it truly is. Thanks for making a great 3 hours for me. I hope it was for you as well. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, to Sue, to Lottie, News Ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, my head writer, David in Tennessee, our newest correspondent on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com homepage, Reverbo. And thanks to all of you for keeping all of this going. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Say goodbye to February. It'll be March when we're together again. Most likely in like a lion. God knows I'll try to be. Jeff Biggers joins us Monday night. Be here for that. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.